Okay, let's go ahead and call the committee to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Present.
Representative Beatty.
Here.
Representative Binkley.
Here.
Vice Chair Caffaro.
She's here.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Here.
Representative Falk.
Here.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Excused.
Representative Gillette.
Excused.
Representative Hamilton.
Here.
Representative Hastings.
Here.
Representative Hellegaard.
Here.
Representative Hopkins.
Excused.
Representative Keough.
Here.
Representative Mercer.
Here.
Representative Moore.
Here.
Representative Nave.
Here.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
Here. Excuse.
Representative Reed.
Here.
Representative Regeer.
Excused.
Representative Schillinger.
Excused.
Representative Tuss.
Here.
Representative Wendy Boy.
Excused.
Chair Jones.
Here. Okay, we have a quorum present. We can do business. I think we're going to, because our sponsor is here and they had a couple bills we heard on the floor by Representative Smith, that I think we'll do them first because otherwise she'll be stuck waiting for hours because the long range will take a little longer. So let's, both these bills have been heard. So the questions and conversations on the fiscal notes, House Bill 743 or 740, whatever one you wish to start with, start with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. My name is Laura Smith. Is it all right if I start with HB 740?
We are opening the hearing on 740.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Laura Smith, L-A-U-R-A-S-M-I-T-H. I represent the west side of Helena from the back of Mount Helena, out past the Scratch Gravel Hills. So HB 740, I'll just give a brief overview. This bill relates to children being sent to out-of-state facilities through DPHHS. These are kids who have pretty serious mental health challenges, as many of you know, and diagnoses. I suspect as the, maybe all of you know this, that this can be quite a costly endeavor to send young people out of state to out-of-state facilities. And I learned this firsthand as Deputy Director at DPHHS. And the quality of care is something that if we're paying that much, we should absolutely be seeing it. So the bill briefly does two things. It enhances the reporting to this body regarding whether we're getting our money's worth sending kids out of state and what kind of quality of care we're getting for that. Second, it really dials in on the quality of care question through quarterly case reviews of, and this is pretty specific, of kids in DPHHS's custody, so kids who are in foster care who are sent to out-of-state facilities. I have to commend DPHHS. I talked to Ms. Peel, commend them for the work that they're doing on really trying to get a sense of the quality of care out of state. They're doing a pretty modest amount of case reviews. And so part of this bill essentially requires those case reviews to be based on national standards for sample size to really ensure that the department has the ability to conduct quality case reviews to ensure kids are safe and getting the treatment they need. Lastly, the bill requires immediate case reviews for youth who receive three or more chemical or physical restraints in 1 month. So restraints are anywhere from physical restraints to using medication to sedate children. So this leads to the fiscal note, and what I really saw through the fiscal note was an illustration of the necessity of this bill. You'll see on page 2 of the fiscal note, item 3, an estimation of 25 kids per month would require that immediate restraint case review for kids who are being restrained 3 times a month. You'll also see in the fiscal note, I won't go into great detail, but really important element, which is making sure that these case reviews aren't just pulling sort of a small sliver, but making sure that case reviews are happening for what is really a national standard in the number of kids per quarter that they do case reviews on. So I appreciate your consideration and will yield to witnesses.
Thank you. Are there proponents? Proponents? Proponents online? Opponents? Opponents online? Oh, informational.
Good morning, Chair Jones and members of the Appropriation Committee. My name is Megan Peel. It's spelled P-E-E-L. And I serve as the Bureau Chief for the Children's Mental Health Bureau at DPHHS and am here to answer any questions about the fiscal note.
Okay. Additional informational? See no hands raised. Okay. Questions from the committee? Questions from the committee? Representative Beatty.
Thank you. Question for the sponsor, please.
For the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beatty.
Chairman Jones, good sponsor. This is just a question because I've worked in the educational realm with education for children in in-state facilities. So I have a passing knowledge of this. The question I have for you is, how does a determination made as to whether a child is treated in-state versus out-of-state?
Representative Beatty, I need one more cup of coffee. Thanks for that question. I'll tell you, I think that Ms. Peel may be able to give a more detailed answer. May I refer? Re-refer?
Please. Re-refer.
Chair Jones, Representative Beatty, thank you for that question. For psychiatric residential treatment, we have two providers in Montana, which you're aware of. In order for Medicaid to pay for a youth to be placed in an out-of-state placement, they do have to receive denials from the two in-state providers and then meet all the same medical necessity criteria, and then it goes through the same utilization review process to make sure they're meeting medical necessity every 30 days.
Follow-up. And so grounds for denial are generally because the facility believes that it cannot provide the treatment?
Chair Jones and Representative Beatty, yes. One of the components of the out-of-state report that this House Bill 740 modifies is we do report on reasons for denial, and historically it really has been what you mentioned, where the facility feels they can't meet the needs due to like really specialized needs or aggression. In more recent years, we've seen a lot more denials, almost half of them, for no bed availability.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee? Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I close.
Thank you. That closes the hearing on this bill. We are now on 743.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Laura Smith, L-A-U-R-A-S-M-I-T-H, and I represent the west side of Helena. So today I bring you HB 743, which I will tell you is the simplest bill that I've brought, and it is four words. So it adds nieces and nephews to the current incest statute to ensure that sexual offenses against nieces and nephews may be punished under the incest law. This issue was actually brought to my attention after a case where a pretty horrible case was brought under the incest statute, and on appeal, it was realized that nieces and nephews were not part of the statute. 40 or more states have nieces and nephews included in their incest statute. And so a few quick items on, I'll go directly into the fiscal note. So while I don't disagree with the fiscal note's estimate of an average increase of a handful of convictions a year, based on a 3-year average, I will say that the, you know, there's availability of other statutes, but they don't really account for the incest conduct, and so that's the reason that I brought this bill. And so I would say, just as a former prosecutor who has passed enough math classes to be dangerous, the conceptual ROI on this and preventing lifelong trauma to kids is pretty priceless, and I am not opposed to the number in the fiscal note either. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, proponents, please.
Chairman Jones, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nanette Gilbertson, G-I-L-B-E-R-T-S-O-N, and I'm here representing the Montana County Attorneys Association in support of the policy of this bill. As the sponsor said, it's four words added to statute that we think are important and critical. As to the fiscal note, I also agree with the sponsor. In the vast majority of these cases, prosecutors would utilize a different statute, such as 45-5503, sexual intercourse without consent, or 45-5508, aggravated sexual intercourse without consent, in order to move forward with the prosecution. However, putting this in the incest statute is a good policy move for the state, and the fiscal note will be worth it. Thank you.
Okay, additional proponents? Seeing no hands raised online. Are there opponents? No hands raised online. Informational.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Natalie Smitham. That's S-M-I-T-H-A-M. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Corrections, here to answer any questions you may have on the fiscal note.
Okay, additional informational. Questions from the committee. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I want to start with the sponsor, if I may.
For the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Smith. I was sorry to hear that you didn't take issue with the fiscal note. I think the projection looks really high to me. I'm surprised that the projection is that there would be four additional prison commitments per year. Do you know in the other states that have incorporated nieces and nephews as potential victims that would be covered by the statute, how many nieces and nephews have actually been convicted and sentenced in those states?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, so you're saying your question is, in the other states, how many of the offenders and nieces and nephews have been convicted?
Sorry, bad question. Of the defendants convicted, how many of them had nieces and nephews as incest victims?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, I don't have the answer to that question. I can look around and see if I can gather it. It might be difficult given the volume.
Go ahead, sorry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, just as a follow-up to your statement at the beginning, I will tell you, as a freshman, this has been a real learning process for me related to fiscal notes, and I think it was really only under further consideration, unfortunately, sharing that concern that you have for that high number, because frankly, the reality is, and you know this better than I do, is that these individuals would likely be convicted under a different statute that will have an amount of time in prison that's not necessarily accounted for in the fiscal note already. And so that is a recognition that I agree with.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So I will say that listening to Ms. Gilbertson's testimony and your testimony, I am a little confused of what we anticipate the delta being between the number of incest cases or other cases that would capture this class of defendant, whether we anticipate that there will be additional defendants as a result of this statute, or if we're merely trying to bring this victim class under 45-507. In other words, is there a fiscal impact at all, or are we expecting a larger number of cases? Is really what I'm trying to ask.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is a great question. I'm wondering if DOC might be able to answer that in their analysis.
Yeah, I was going to ask Ms. Smitham eventually. So, and I would say, I mean, that's a big number in 2027 to think that we'd be looking at a half a million or more. And of course, when we see fiscal notes like this, the big concern is that eventually the bill will die because of the fiscal note.
Right. And Mr. Chair, Representative, that's one of the things that stood out to me after further analysis and talking to other individuals, is I share that concern that number doesn't reflect the individuals who may also have been convicted under a different statute, perhaps not as long of a sentence, but are those individuals currently incarcerated? So is this fiscal note an inflation of the reality?
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Smith. So, Mr. Chairman, may I redirect?
Redirect.
To Ms. Smitham. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Smitham, good morning. I'm obviously, you know where I'm going here. We've got 14 offenders, according to assumption number two, convicted each year under this statute. And I'm really skeptical that merely by adding the words a niece or nephew will result in four additional prison commitments per year that would generate this number in the fiscal note. So can you help us understand the methodology behind the calculation?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer. As you're aware, with fiscal notes, we do need to make assumptions. We don't know necessarily what will happen in the future in terms of convictions. In our consideration of this fiscal note, one of the things that we considered is that we do know that particularly children who are victims of abuse, that often is at the hands of a family member, that is common. And so that was something we took into consideration when contemplating that assumption. The other thing that I wanted to note is that even if a conviction happens under a different sentence, as the sponsor was discussing, if we feel like this could potentially increase sentence length, that would also impact costs to the Department of Corrections. And so that's something that we consider as well.
All right, follow, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So it's back to my Delta question. If we assume that, let's assume the statute isn't enacted, the defendants that have, those that have been investigated, there's been a determination made that there was a hands-on sex offense. So I think it's fair to assume that there's a high probability that they're going to be prosecuted for incest. They would have been prosecuted for a hands-on sex offense. So I don't see why there's a delta change here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, I think from our perspective, our concern would be that with an additional charge that could lengthen sentence length, which would also increase the cost of the department.
All right, follow, Mr. Chairman.
Follow.
So focusing exclusively on that, is that what is driving the expenditure line, an addition in sentence length?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, again, building on assumptions and knowing that we don't know for sure what would happen, we assumed an additional four people on the jail roster per year.
Okay.
Be that as a result of additional convictions or lengthened incarceration. Prison roster, excuse me. I think I said jail roster.
All right. Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't really know what to do with this, I guess. I am concerned that the bill will die because of a $500,000 expenditure in 2027. And I agree with Ms. Smitham that they have to make assumptions, but I think that the assumption that there will be additional defendants convicted is not viable. So, well, let me just ask one more question. Sorry, Ms. Smitham, I should have asked this earlier. So let's assume I'm right that there will be no additional convictions. How much additional time are you building into this estimate on sentence length? Because I know you said earlier that you thought that there was a possibility that sentences would be longer for someone convicted of incest of a niece or nephew as opposed to a hands-on sex offense or of a niece or nephew. So is there any, what's the empirical case for a sentence being longer if the victim is an incest victim as opposed to a victim of a sexual offense at the hands of a aunt or uncle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, I'm going to attempt to answer your question, and if I don't do so accurately, please let me know. If you look at assumption number four on the fiscal note, we looked at average prison term for incest currently, and the average prison term right now is 63 years per case of incest. So simply, in an attempt to quantify what that increased sentence length or that increased prison population could equate to, we assumed an additional four people per year, and then assumed that those four people would stay on the rolls for the length of this fiscal note, given that we're looking at a four-year period.
All right, Ms. Chairman and Ms. Smitham, thank you for that. I guess it's your note, and you get to decide what these numbers are. If I were arguing with you about it, though, I think I would say we should at least then look at what the average prison term is for a hands-on sex offender. Because if that sentence length is equal to 63, and should that be 63 months?
Mr. Chair, President Mercer, I believe it is 63 years.
You're saying the average prison term for a defendant convicted in an incest case is 63 years?
Mr. Chair, I believe that is accurate. We can confirm that for you.
All right. I'm out of questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Smitham, please. Mr. Chair, Ms. Smitham, I'm not an attorney, nor do I play one, but so I'm a little confused here, but it strikes me that if I'm hearing two things. One is possibility of more convictions, which may be questionable under this statute, but the second piece is an extension of their prison term. If it's 63 years, wouldn't show up on this fiscal note for another 59 years, if I got this right. So that number doesn't go into this fiscal note at all. If we assume Representative Mercer's case that there are no additional convictions, extension of prison term wouldn't matter in this fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, I can certainly verify that 63-year term for you. I'm definitely not an attorney, so relying on other data to account for that. So we'll go back and double-check that for you. I think, like I said, from our standpoint, we're really trying to account for the potential of increased costs down the road. And while some of those sentences may be longer, some of them may be shorter. And so it is, I appreciate the recognition of this committee that it is really difficult to kind of quantify and make those assumptions to make these projections. But essentially recognizing that we do anticipate an increased cost, we did our best to kind of assume what that would be.
Follow up, please.
Follow up.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Smitham, grant, and I'll concede for you, no one knows about the possibility of increased convictions. I'm just sort of wanting to parse out the extended prison term. If there were no additional convictions, extended prison term on those convicted under another statute, if it goes from 63 to 67 years, that extra 4 years isn't going to show up on this fiscal note because this note doesn't go out that far. Do I have that part right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, yes, I believe that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, additional questions from the committee. Representative Cafaro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one for Ms. Smitham as well. Please.
Ms. Smitham.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cafaro.
Ms. Smitham, Mr. Chairman. So number four, it says average prison term is 63 years. So that means some have longer terms, some have shorter terms, but this is the average. And I don't know if youth are tried as adults, but if someone is convicted of this at age 18, then it seems like they're pretty old by the time they reach the end of their term. And I'm wondering if how many of those inmates actually die before they reach the full 63 years.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cafaro, I do not have information on that one way or the other. I could go back to the department and see if that's something we could gather, but I don't have information on that today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Smitham, because if someone is convicted at even age 20, that's 83 years old, and so it seems like the population just inherently goes down because of people don't live that long. Anyway, thank you.
Okay, additional questions from the committee? Seeing none. Representative?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the questions today. I share the members' skepticism of the difficult science of this fiscal note, the difficulty of really assessing what the reality would look like. I will underscore Representative Mercer's concern that in really looking at this fiscal note further, what really stood out to me was it does not account for the individuals who have been convicted for the same acts under a different statute. So this, for example, the first year or the first 2 years, it's when I hear the Department of Corrections indicating that it's for additional people, I have concerns about that because those individuals who may have already been convicted would be in the Department of Corrections custody already. So I share that concern. I appreciate your time, and I close.
That closes the hearing on 743. Thank you. We'll switch to House Bill 6 when we give folks a chance to clear here. Representative Hopkins, it becomes your show for a while.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mike Hopkins, HOPKINS, representative for House District 92 out of Missoula, bringing you here. House Bill 6 is the first of several bills that we will hear today coming from Section F. As I had mentioned yesterday, the two types of programs that Section F looks at, the second one dealing with grant and loan programs. House Bill 6 comes to you in that vein as the renewable resource grant and loan program, and then specifically House Bill 6 is the grant portion of that grant and loan program. So with a lot of these bills that we will be processing here for the rest of Section F's work, the name of the program itself has something to do with the type of projects that are capable of applying for the funding, and usually also makes up an extra scoring criteria for the projects themselves as they make their way through the process. The Renewable Resource Grant Program allows individuals to have a grant of up to $150,000. As the name would imply, the majority of projects that are applying to this program are water projects, wastewater projects, stormwater projects, irrigation projects, and the like. Renewable resource grant dollars come from indemnity trust dollars, RGWA dollars, some associated fees, and the rest of it, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 6 comes to the committee, including, this is not the right one. There we go. Comes including 73 projects for a total of $9 million, and then also includes an additional $7.4 million for a variety of planning grants and emergency grants, irrigation development grants, and the like. It also includes an appropriation from the general fund for the St. Mary's Water Project, specifically for work on the siphons. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will go ahead and sit for proponents, opponents. Look forward to the conversation and reserve to close.
Okay, thank you. Our proponents. Proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lindsay Volpe. Last name is spelled V as in Victor, O-L, P as in Peter E, and I manage a renewable resource grant and loan program at the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. I'd like to thank Representative Hopkins for carrying the bill and for the members of Section F for their work on House Bill 6. With your approval, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hand out a copy of our executive budget book so you can see the information on our projects and the work that was done.
Please do.
With me today are Autumn Coleman, our Bureau Chief, and Anna Miller, our Fiscal Manager. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present this before you, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Additional proponents.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Kelly Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H. I am the executive director of the Montana League of Cities and Towns. Our cities and towns benefit greatly, particularly our rural communities, from the RGL program, and so we stand in strong support. Ask for your a yes vote. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Clayton Elliott, ELLIOTT, representing Montana Trout Unlimited, wanted to stand in support and first thank the subcommittee and the chairman for the work in long-range planning. What you see in front of you in House Bill 6 is a great work product of that diligent review. We are often applicant. I do not have any projects in House Bill 6 this year, but often a participant in the Renewable Resource Grant Loan Program. It's a critical part of funding structure for putting together restoration projects that I talk about often being good for rural communities, good for irrigators, and good for fish at the end of the day. I wanted to specifically mention the value in House Bill 6 for the planning grants, and it's part of the program that you might not often hear about. You see the list of projects on there, but those projects don't just come out of thin air. Those planning grants are critical seed money where across this work of restoration or irrigation or water, wastewater, it's often very hard to get a project from an idea to something you see on your piece, on your paper today, finding the engineering work, finding all that startup planning resources is really hard to do, and House Bill 6, the RRGL program, is a critical source of funding for those types of things for your local rural communities and partners to put projects together. So I wanted to stand in support of that aspect. You might lose, it's easy to lose in the list of projects that planning grant money is there, as well as significant grant money for non-point source pollution reduction, which I think is a really responsible investment. With that, just ask for your support of the work product as it came out of subcommittee, and thank you for your time today.
Okay, additional proponents.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mike Murphy, representing the Montana Water Resources Association. We also stand in support of House Bill 6. These grants provide, specifically in regards to the irrigation projects, provide some very important resource from the standpoint of the catalyst that these grants actually provide in many cases to conduct other projects that are very important to the overall infrastructure and the people that are involved, the farmers and ranchers that are impacted by these irrigation projects. For all of these reasons, we stand in support of House Bill 6.
Thank you. Additional proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Patrick, P-A-T-R-I-C-K. I'm the project manager for the Milk River Joint Board of Control. I'd first like to stand in support of all of the great projects in House Bill 6, namely the St. Mary's project, which is a line item in the project. I've been asked to be very brief, so I'm going to skip this testimony if anyone has any questions on that. I would just like to, in that project, it is a federal project. You're asking yourself, why are we coming in to pay for a federal project? We've exhausted all other avenues. The federal government, you guys passed a House joint resolution in 2021 that tried to help us work with the cost share. We've been unsuccessful in working with the cost share. The project is at its max. We've gone through an ability to pay study, and with that ability to pay study, it has come back that the project is upside down. We're backwards in our project. We can't handle one more project. We were just given another $11 million to pay for in a Fresno project, and this is shared over 110,000 irrigated acres. The one thing we were in the recent federal legislation in the bipartisan infrastructure, we received $100 million, which was directly appropriated to the St. Mary's Diversion Dam. And the St. Mary's Diversion Dam, and this is in the weeds a little bit, is also fixing a bull trout issue. More than half of that project, which is almost $100 million, will be designated to the fish passage, friendly features, rock ramp, and everything like that. So these two large projects over $200 million aren't even bringing extra water to the project. We're not fixing anything. Yes, we are getting in compliance with a bull trout issue. Yes, we are fixing that we wouldn't have a situation like the Orville Dam situation with Fresno. But those projects aren't adding any more dollars or revenue or anything to this system. And these 600, 700 irrigators, 18,000 people along the Highline are being asked to pay for these. And so right now we're sitting at this crossroads. In the 1900s, when they built this project for $1 million, they never expected us to come back in and have to pay $300 and $400 million. These have gotten out of hand, and we're asking for your help within this House Bill 6 to fund this project. And I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for the consideration. So.
Thank you. Additional proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, committee. I'm Senator Mike Lang. I'm from Malta originally, or all the time. My district goes from where the Milk River comes into Montana from Canada and runs clear to, and then Milk River dumps into the Missouri River, and then that exits Montana, and that's the end of my district over on the North Dakota border. I, too, am in support of House Bill 6, and also there's some money in there of a loan for House Bill 8. I appreciate your support on that. I'm the one that put the $53 million ask in there for the St. Mary, and I would hope that through our discussions, you'll have some questions for Ms. Patrick or I or Ms. Miller. This is a very tough subject. It is, people wanted water. They had a design to get it. And a guy put this project together 100 years ago. They're one of five in the nation in the early 1900s that went for water for the federal government. The federal government says, you bet you, we'll help you out. 75% growers. Cost 25% federal government. Then they turn around, and after that, when all the other hundreds of irrigation projects in America came out, those are funded at a 25% cost to the producer and a 75% cost to the government. So it flip-flopped. And you've heard in this hall is Montana's first in a lot of projects. And we were. And this is one of the projects we were first in. And then those guys, they wanted water, they signed off to it. It's got a Canadian lateral agreement. Starts on the Blackfoot Reservation. And if I think if you could have a map or think about it, you have Sherburn Dam and Glacier Park, which is federal. The water goes into the St. Mary River. The St. Mary River runs up to Canada. 29 miles from there, we divert it out into the Milk River. The Milk River runs about 5 or 6 miles. That water goes into Canada and comes back out, and that becomes the irrigation starting basically at Haver. The two things that, why do I think we people have to be involved is safety of dams, federal project. At Nelson Reservoir, which is by Malta, a couple years ago, more than that, 7 or 8 years ago, they decided to do a safety of dams project. Well, the old timer that had been working there for all the years said, do not touch that dike. Do not touch that. That is a gravel. It's been sitting there since 1933. Do not mess it up. They went in the safety of dams because two people were going to die maybe potentially if the dam broke down to Glasgow, Montana. Well, the Milk River has flooded so many times that if you are not living above high water in Glasgow, Montana by this time, maybe you should have some flood water run through. But anyway, that cost my growers 15%. They were over $3 million of the budget, so there is $1.5 million that is extra to the growers. And I don't remember the total of that deal, but I do know on the Fresno Dam, which is another thing now, that here was a crack found in 1936. That thing has ran from then until now, and now they're going to make them replace that dam on no federal money. No matter what, my irrigators, my person, just like every one of your checkbooks in here that use that water, 15%, $11 million comes out of their pocket. And they have prograded that out so that it's a long-term deal. Okay, FEMA, Federal Emergency Assistance Act. They were in this state last year getting a lot of money. They used our tax money also with the federal money to work on the Yellowstone and catastrophic adventures. I met with those people yesterday. They said, Senator, we can help you in 24 months. And maybe we can help you to $1 million or $2 a year after that. Well, my reason for putting the $53 million in is if you had a siphon on this top of this table, went down on the floor and come out of Representative Jones, that thing is 8 foot, two of those, 8 foot wide running water, going through property and land that's never been disturbed for 100 years since they were put in there. If you see some pictures, you'll see one of them was down in the ground. They realized that we don't want them in the ground now, so now they raise the rest of them up so that what they can work on them if they have problems. And there's many pictures of patching, and they go and inspect them, and even though they get them inspected, they still leak. But they've been in there 100 years. FEMA yesterday just said, you can't have steel out there for 100 years. It's 50 years is how long steel lasts. Well, I didn't know that, but that's where I'm at with this $53 million is if those siphons, there's two locations with two siphons, each in each location. If one of those siphons breaks, not a leak, I'm talking break, it's taking the other one with it. And you're going to have 100 years of non-soil erosion going to go down those coulees, and we won't be able to rebuild it. We can't do it with any of the money we're doing now. They're up into $30, $35 an acre for an AUM, and there's many things we're trying to work on with the same area to expand the project in efficiencies, which many of us, our lives are efficiencies, but these things were not efficient 100 years ago. And I think it's important that we do that. The Blackfoot are very cordial to go through there, but from the water comes from Sherburn to the diversion down the drops. We fixed the drops in 22 months. That was because of Ms. Patrick and her crew got together with BOR. BOR gave us the drawings, and it was done in 22 months. Unheard of. The safety of the diversion dam, I want to clear up one thing about that, because and I'm not begging about past history, but ARPA, I thought we should have got some money out of that, because we have 18,000 people that get water out of the system. We go through two reservations, we go into a foreign country, and we have 120,000 acres of irrigatable land at the end of it. But safety on a diversion, $100 million is coming to us in Montana for that, and the same areas as the name on that project. And if you look at the federal, that's what it'll say. $100 million from the federal government to fix a diversion dam. Diversion dam needs to be fixed because of the bull trout. And the bull trout need to stay out of the Milk River. The diversion dam up there works right now that we have. It's functional, not 100% functional. It's 100 years old. But a lawsuit by the Alliance of, I won't say the name of the nonprofit, but they sued us over this bull trout thing. So Senator Tester got on board. Okay, we need to fix this. When I first started looking at this project, it was 38 or 39 million. We're up to 92 million right now. And that's just inflation, that's the cost of engineering. And I want Montana, you can call it St. Mary's Diversion Dam, but we aren't spending a penny of that. That is for a lawsuit and for bull trout. And if you've all seen the Milk River where I live, it's a little kind of like, Lewis and Clark called it like tea with put a little milk in it, and that's kind of the Milk River. When you go up to the headwaters of the Milk River where it comes out of Sherburn Dam and out of St. Mary's and comes down those drops, it's the most beautiful, crisp, pristine water you've ever seen. But as it goes to 250 miles down to where it starts to be unused, it starts to pick up sediment. The Milk River will go dry without help. The thing that without the St. Mary irrigator, the Milk River, St. Mary irrigation running into the Milk, it does go dry. One of the things that FEMA said yesterday, because they seem more excited, and the reason that I have not talked to them in a previous was, I was on another tour for military affairs. I used to serve on Section A in the Senate, and we were out there with some other stuff, and one of the ladies started talking about FEMA, about the Yellowstone thing, and we're going to build two new construction projects for them so they can store stuff to be available when they have a federal disaster like they had at the Yellowstone. Well, maybe this will work for us. We set up this meeting, and I asked her yesterday, what if Montana would put in $53 million? Oh, that will make our stuff go way further in D.C. because Montana is saying, we want this project. Here's a FEMA project. We'll help it down the road so we can maybe get some more money for it. I know you have lots of ideas or lots of worthy projects. And I really think this is a worthy project. It's a lot of money. I commend Ms. Patrick. I've looked through those numbers. You know, any of you, you've been on appropriations. I was on Section F, so I see the architect costs of building stuff, what it was when I came here 12 years ago and now what it is today. It's gone up a lot. And that's the same thing in these projects. You can start a design project on the, let's just take the diversion, $39 million. It's the same design now, but it costs $91 million. Instead of a $10 million price tag on a BOR design, it's $20 million. And that's just the way government works. It's phenomenal that they've gotten where they are, and I'm very proud of the project, and I hope you will consider this. And please find some money somehow in this system. It's a very good project. And the other thing I will say, and I've had this discussion in front of the Fort Belknap Tribal Council, because that compact was ratified in 79. It has not been passed by the federal government. Paragraph 7 of that compact says, Fort Belknap Indian Reservation has no water rights unless there's water in the Milk River. We aren't going there yet, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm not into that, but those are the things of the federal involvement with this project, and I think it's time for Montana to step up. You've helped in a lot of ways, but in Alberta up in there, Alberta gets $15 million a year for the St. Mary project on the north side of the river, Milk River. And we, the farmers and the people in eastern Montana use this water, should have been pounding a long time ago. Senator Chester, when he was over in president of the Senate, started this program federally. It also gets brought up about the 25-75 split. And a couple years ago, we're in Havre at a St. Mary meeting. The senator's there. He's online. I will get the law in. I will put the bill in to change it from 75% responsibility of the government. Everybody was elated. I walk out of there, I says, it's November 28th. He's going to put that bill in December. It dies December 31st of that year. The bill that was in last year is dead today until someone brings that out in the federal coffers. And if this catastrophic thing goes, if these two or four water projects, if they fail, $53 million is going to be nothing. The other thing about it is it's $15 million more if we do two siphons versus the four. I've been involved with this thing where they were going to go in and just say you had the siphons running down between these tables. They were going to cover this whole thing over with plastic so they could work on it in the wintertime. Cost goes crazy. You can't do that. You have to, and we have a short season. Representative Jones is a farmer. Jerry's a farmer. We know we work with Mother Nature, but in those mountains, you got about 4 or 5 months. And that's where some of the cost comes into. Please support this. Thank you. Sorry for getting so wound up. If you got questions, we'll be here.
Thank you. Additional proponents?
Kathy will hand these out too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll be short and sweet. My name is Krista Lee Evans, EVANS, and I'm here today on behalf of AGGI, the Association of Gallatin Agricultural Irrigators, and we stand in support of House Bill 6, in particular the planning grant portion of it has been very helpful in the Gallatin, and we ask for your support as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Additional proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Boslow-King, spelled B-O-S-L-O-U-G-H hyphen K-I-N-G, and I represent the Montana Association of Conservation Districts. Within House Bill 6, there is important funding for several specific conservation district projects. Additionally, conservation districts also often come in on RRGL to get conservation on the ground. So with that, we stand in support, and I am available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponents? Proponents online. Are there opponents? Oh, wait, a proponent popped up. Dr. Shaw. You are muted, sir.
I'm sorry. Is that better? I'm sorry.
Yes, we hear you now.
Chairman, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Alan Shaw, A-L-A-N-S-H-A-W. And thank you for allowing me to address the committee. I represent the Fort Smith Water and Sewer District, and we're in the process of replacing our wastewater system that has badly failed. It has been documented that it is leaking into the groundwater and the Bighorn River, causing significant health and safety issues for the community. I'm here to ask the committee to consider awarding funds to reduce the funding shortfall we are presently facing. This shortfall is a result of multiple issues: inflationary factors, increased expensive additional DEQ and EPA requirements, such as an aeration system, sludge removal, pumping of effluent, and rerouting electrical power. The original budget for our project was approximately $5.9 million and now has been revised to $9.1 million. On our own, as a result of hard, diligent efforts, the district has raised over $6.5 million. There, of course, is still this shortfall. We have a commitment from the State Revolving Fund, SRF, to cover the shortfall. However, if we take a loan for approximately $2.6 million, the residents of Fort Smith will be severely burdened by having to pay back this debt. The district is currently repaying a $2.5 million loan that's about 10 years old for replacing our water system. And to put on top of this, an additional $2.6 million loan will be very difficult for the residents of Fort Smith, largely who are low to middle income persons and families. I think this next issue is important. It has been asserted by some that the Fort Smith project is unworthy for additional funding because we have, and this is a quote, done nothing so far to warrant this consideration, unquote. This is completely inaccurate. We have worked tirelessly for 2 years or more to get to this point. We are on the verge of putting the project out to bid in the next week or two and expect to begin putting pipe in the ground this summer. We meet every month or so with the regulatory agencies, namely Montana DEQ, DNRC, the EPA, MSEP, RRGL, the Economic Development Agency.
Dr. Shaw? I think you're a House Bill 11, not a House Bill 6. Let me check with the chair.
Mr. Chairman, that definitely could be correct. I just figured that between House Bill 6 and House Bill 11, especially considering the crossover for projects that are applying for grants from both, that we could probably handle it here in House Bill 6 testimony, but obviously up to the chair.
That's fine. Then we'll assume that it might be on more than one bill. Continue, Dr. Shaw.
Sorry, I'm almost done, and I apologize for taking so much of your time. And I do plan to testify for House Bill 11 as well with Representative Fitzpatrick. As I mentioned, we're trying to refute the idea that since some have the impression that we are not progressing very rapidly, to refute that. I spoke yesterday to Ms. Anna Miller from DNRC, who oversees much of these projects, and asked her to comment on the progress of Fort Smith when compared to other ARPA-approved programs. She stated that we are completely on track and at least equal or well ahead of many of the other programs in our moving forward. That's all I have, and I thank you for your assistance and consideration, and certainly for your patience in listening to this presentation. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Okay, additional proponents. Opponents? Are there informational witnesses?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jason Harlow, H-A-R-L-O-W, Section F staff for the Governor's Budget Office. I'll be available this morning for House Bill 6, 7, 8, and 11. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Additional informational? Okay, seeing none, questions from the committee. Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Ms. Patrick.
Ms. Patrick.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuss.
Thank you. A couple questions, actually. Ms. Patrick, I know that I'm obviously familiar with the project that you've discussed with us, the St. Mary project, and I know at various points we had talked about the potential of, you know, this project is 100 years old, literally wheelbarrows and horses put this together back in the 19-teens, and we talked about catastrophic failure. We were concerned about that, and so we started planning for that. But it never occurred until that fateful day that we all woke up, right, and there was literally catastrophic failure on this project. I know in your testimony you kept it short, but could you talk about how fragile this particular system is and the impact, what that was, what that event was, and how that impacted everything on the High Line for a while?
Yes, absolutely, Mr. Chairman, Representative Tuss. So I guess back up to the system is 100 years old. The federal government has been investing small portions into the system on the part of the irrigators as well, because their cost share is 75%. We have been in front of your committee many times in the renewable resource program. We were able to get a renewable resource grant for $125,000. We engineered out Drop 2. The federal government told us Drop 2 was going to fail, so we engineered out Drop 2. Thank goodness that Drop 5 was very similar, just longer and very similar. We were able to change the schematics. Senator Lang said 22 months. It was actually 22 weeks because of these great projects. And so we took the schematics and were able to, with quick action from the state of Montana, the federal government, the joint board, we were able to construct these in 22 weeks because we had such an important base for this project. If we didn't, Reclamation came in and said this would have been 2 or 3 years. Now, 2 or 3 years to the Milk River project that already has been sitting in drought. The Milk River project runs dry 8 out of 10 years. It provides water for 18,000 people. And some of you sit on the North Centrals and the Rocky Boy project. And you say, well, Havre's going to be satisfied with that project. Well, that's only a supplemental source. And then you go 200-plus miles to put Chinook and Harlem and those on there. It doesn't work. And so, number one, we're the only source for water in the basin. The other thing that we have is a lot of hunting and recreation. Without the Milk River, it's gone. We saw herds of elk move. We saw aquifers dry up. And this was 22 weeks. So think about if the federal government took on this project, what it would do in 3 years. So we're just trying to be proactive. The siphons are the next large failure. Anything else on that system is dirt work. You can mobilize a crew there. You could get the canals, the overarching projects that are there can happen in weekends and weeks and stuff like that. But as far as bringing in siphons from back east or Denver or wherever, depending on the products that you decide, it takes water away from the Milk River project for over 3 years if a siphon were to fail.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Could you talk about, I know here in the legislature we always talk about skin in the game, right? So this system has been around for 100 years. Obviously, the irrigators that Senator Lang talked about, as well as the municipalities for the last 100 years, if there's a problem, if there's an issue, they have dug deep into their pockets to really fund those repairs. Could you give a little flavor to that, that this isn't just government giving money to this particular project, that actually the users of this water for a century have been doing the same thing?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Tess, first off, the project base budget through reclamation is $1 million a year. And on top of that million, the irrigation districts all have their own aging infrastructure that have been pre-projects. Some of these projects are even pre-project. And so the aging infrastructure is throughout the entire basin. When I'm going to take Malta, for example, Malta's budget right now is between $30 and $40 before they even get water, regardless if there's any water, per acre. And so the amount of money that they have to put back into these projects is minimal. And so they've gone through the grant and loan programs. They've gone through the small projects where you say skin in the game. We've sent crews up from our irrigation districts to fix slides, and a slide is when the canal just drops completely in from the mountainside and we can't get any water. We've sent our crews up there. We've taken small construction projects where we needed seals in different things, and they add up quickly. They add up to hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that's adding $1 and $2, and the biggest part is the commodity and the crops that we're growing at this cost, and that's that ability to pay study that Reclamation did, can't support one or two or three more dollars. And that's where we're looking at all of these. We're trying to do as many projects in kind. We have taken out loans. Reclamation allows us to take out 50-year loans. But you can only kick the can so many times, and that's what has happened. And in the last 30 years, we've been trying to be proactive, and it's just we're so far upside down. So, Representative Tess.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor, please. Mr. Chair and Representative Hopkins, I'm just trying to recall my time at this and organize the way to look at this, maybe for all of us. And so I want to come back and just sort of walk through things. You can correct me. So new Section 1 in the bill talks about up to $6.9 million being available from the state special revenue for all of these projects that are in HB6. Is that, do I understand that right? Talks about emergency project grants.
Chairman, Representative, so the distinction would be between the regular dollars that are available for the grants from House Bill 6 and then the additional planning grants, emergency grants, non-source point pollution grants, and the rest of it. I'm not sure which portion you're talking about, but the 6.5 certainly sounds like the additional emergency grant pocket, and the $9 million that you would be seeing would be there for the regular renewable resource grants, or at least what we think about as the renewable resource grants.
So could I ask you to look at A through F here in the bill? I'm kind of just trying to organize it once again. If that's related to then item 2 in the grant, so we have up to 6.9. It's on the front page there. A through F up to 6.9, and then item 2 is saying, well, we appropriated of that 6.9, 6.4.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yeah, touche. I forgot that there was the split between the water, wastewater, and then the irrigation grant, so that does make sense.
Okay, second question, follow-up, Mr. Chair. So then in looking at the booklet here, the first set of 50 grants would be all water, wastewater projects. And are they also planning grants in there somewhere, that, or is that just water, wastewater?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, in addition to the water, wastewater, there is $300,000 for emergency projects, $3.5 million for planning grants, $500,000 for irrigation development grants, $500,000 for watershed grants, $100,000 for private grants, and $2.5 million for non-point source pollution reduction grants, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up. So, Mr. Chair and Representative, maybe I'm still getting lost here. The 6.4 that's listed on the amended bill on line 28 is part of that $6.9 million that's listed above there, or is that in addition? I was thinking you were saying...
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, again, Katie Callen with the Legislative Fiscal Division. So section one, section one, subsection one, A through F are the, what we call the other grants. So that's the emergency grants, the planning grants, the ones that the chairman just listed. Those total to $7.4 million. And then starting in subsection two, the $6.4 million is where you have the water, wastewater, there's stormwater, and I believe there is one specific planning grant that was added. And that is on, there are 50 of the projects that are there, and that,
there's the Anaconda project.
That one, exactly. On page six, lines seven through eight is the one kind of specified planning grant. And then, so that's, so that is subsection two, kind of goes through that. Again, that's that $6.4 million, and then subsection three lists out all of the projects and their amounts. And I lost subsection four. Subsection four lists all the projects and their amounts. And then starting on subsection five, which is on page six, you have the amount, and I believe that is for the irrigation district grants. Right. That's the $2.5 million.
Corresponds in this book to the 2.5 that starts on page 13, because that comes to 2.5. So that 2.5 and 6.4 were at 8.9, roughly.
Correct.
But in these ones that are listed back to page 1, 1, A through F, are in addition to that 8.9?
Mr. Chairman,
where
yes.
Where are they listed?
So the total for appropriations for the bill, excluding the $53 million for the St. Mary's project, is $16.4 million. And that includes the $9 million of what we would call project grants. That's the 6.4 for the water, wastewater, stormwater, the 2.5 for the irrigation district, and then $7.4 million for other grants that are listed in sections 1, A through F.
And follow up, Mr. Chair and Katie, the specific ones for that, are they in this book? And where do we see those projects?
Mr. Chairman, I believe those are not currently for specific projects, that the DNRC works with applicants and awards those grants. But maybe I could please defer to Ms. Volpe from the DNRC to explain.
Great. Thank you.
We refer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, thank you for that question. Katie is correct. Those would be for appropriations for the next biennium. We have a listing of the past applications for planning grants, but that does not, that won't match the amount that we're requesting for the next biennium.
Follow up. So then these numbers here are sort of stocking the bank for future projects that are coming.
Representative Hamilton, yes, thank you for that question.
Thank you.
Okay, additional questions? Okay, seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, so House Bill 6 comes forward in good working order, obviously a little bit larger than we are used to seeing it. For my own part, what I would say is obviously St. Mary started out as a federal project approved, I believe, in 1903 as part of the Reclamation Act. But I would say two things. One, while it may have started out from the federal side, obviously it is not in Washington, D.C. It is here in Montana. Montana, and when things go bad, it goes bad for Montanans, not individuals. In D.C., these siphons themselves are obviously quite aged, and as I try to make the point over and over again, the materials that we use in construction and building have lifespans, and we can shut these siphons down to give emergency repairs to them, and my impression is that we have done so, but at some point, those emergency repairs simply aren't enough to keep them going, and when they stop working, as we have seen with the failures on drops and the rest of it, we end up regretting that we did not go back and fix them in the first place. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd ask for due consideration of House Bill 6. I thank the committee for its time.
Thank you, sir. That concludes the hearing on House Bill 6, and we are moving on. House Bill 7.
Mr. Chairman, simply because of the simplicity of House Bill 7 and how great it was put together, I was hoping that I wouldn't have to go up to the podium or anything, even though it is an individual bill. So with that, Mr. Chairman, House Bill 7 is the Reclamation and Development Grant Program, again, along the lines that the name of the program itself has something to do with the type of projects that the program deals with. The Reclamation and Grant Development Grant Program deals with reclamation from natural resource extraction. The dollars come out of the same natural resource account that funds the Renewable Resource Grant Program, a similar mix of dollars, obviously. The program itself includes 10 projects for a total of $3,653,347. Mr. Chairman, I would say for proponents, opponents, look forward to the conversation. Reserve to close.
Okay. With that, are there proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jory Dyer. For the record, that's D-Y-E-R, and I am the program manager for the Reclamation Development Grants Program. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I also have a budget book to pass out with more detailed information.
Please do.
And I would just like to thank Representative Hopkins and the Long Range Planning Committee for all their work on this, and I will be available for questions.
Thank you. Additional proponents?
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Clayton Elliott, ELL-IOTT, representing Montana Trout Unlimited. Also wanted to stand in support of House Bill 7 as presented to you. And again, thank the subcommittee for the good work product that they bring here. Also wanted to, I would be remiss not to thank the staff at DNRC for both of these programs. We couldn't do this work without the competent and capable staff at DNRC who help get these projects out the door and help support partners and organizations and applicants who are coming forward. I clearly did not have enough coffee this morning. I misspoke on House Bill 6. We did have one project, and I wanted to highlight the opportunity to work with conservation districts. House Bill 6 have a project with Ruby Valley Conservation District. House Bill 7 was actually the one that I don't have a specific project, but wanted to offer our support for the Muddy Creek project in House Bill 7, our partner with Sun River Watershed Group. Working on that project there. But again, globally speaking to the value of the planning grants, and particularly here in House Bill 7 with Reclamation and Development, the opportunity to tackle crucial state need, one of those being drought planning. As we all know, across the state of Montana, we're dealing with a situation where we have decreasing water supply, increasing demands, and in those scenarios where we are trying to find ways to make a limited resource go further, I think in the planning grant opportunity here in House Bill 7 under the statute, we have an opportunity to really think critically about how we plan for those droughts moving forward. So for a variety of reasons, House Bill 7 is a great bill. For us and the work that we do on the ground to help make fish habitat better, and I think in the end help add value to conservation districts, to irrigation projects, and also to rural communities. So as House Bill 7 stands, we wanted to stand in support and offer our recommendation for a due pass. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, additional proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kelly Lynch, LYNCH. I'm the executive director of the Montana League of Cities and Towns. We always have a couple of communities that benefit from the RDGP grants, particularly those from our natural resources communities, heavy on industry, working on doing asbestos remediation.
and other water cleanup projects. So we ask for your support. I think it's a great bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Boslow-King, spelled B-O-S-L-O-U-G-H-K-I-N-G, and I represent the Montana Association of Conservation Districts. I will keep it brief. We also support House Bill 7 as it contains important funding for grants, and as my colleague Clayton Elliott mentioned, there is also the Muddy Creek Project that Sun River Watershed Group is working on in collaboration with Cascade Conservation Districts. There are several other important pieces of funding in here as well. And the conservation districts support House Bill 7 as written. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponents? Proponents online. Are there opponents? Opponents online. Informational. Seeing none, questions from the committee. Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a quick question for the sponsor. Mr. Chair, Representative Hopkins, I'm looking at project number 4. It looks like it's a petroleum tank release cleanup, and I'm just curious about why we're utilizing these funds for that particular project and not the petroleum tank release cleanup funds.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, as far as the distinction between the two, I would turn to Katie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Kirk Carpenter. So we were actually asked that question during the subcommittee, and we did receive an email. So it says, am I allowed to read from the email, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So it says the release source is known. There is no longer a tank owner, and the site is not an emergency response site, which makes it ineligible.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the sponsor, or Katie, whoever would like to answer it. So, same question here, just in terms of organizing this. New section 1, is $2 million unspecified for planning grants coming up in the next biennium. And if I got this correctly, in the last legislature, we did $1 million. So it's an increase of $1 million over the previous time. It's in the booklet, so no. I think I got that one. And then the second paragraph is the specified projects that are inside the bill. And I can't find what was the amount of those kinds of specified projects in the last biennium. Do we have a rough guess on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we'll pull that up for you right now.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, the amount for the specified grants was $5.8 million, and the other grants, the planning grants, were $800,000.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Additional questions? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, this is a great program, not a whole lot to talk about here. I close on House Bill 7.
That closes the hearing on 7, and do you want a break, Mr. Hopkins? I see Representative Logie's in the room, or do you want to roll on, whatever you want?
Mr. Chairman, it is absolutely your preference. I will be here all day, so we are.
In that case, we will give you you can stay right where you are. You don't have to move. Let's let Representative Logie do his bill so that he doesn't have to stay here all day.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. Denley Logie House, District 14, I appreciate not having to be here all day. This bill was the pond study bill, and it is House Bill 520, and it's dealing with the what's happening around Western Montana. We're getting all the ponds being built on private property, on public property. They're not following the guidelines. There are permits that go out But the permit is so, the cost of the permit is so cheap that part of this bill is to review the whole process. And we have wells that are in danger of drying down aquifers because they're being used to fill these ponds, and they don't have the permit for that. They may have water rights, but the water rights might be for irrigation. They might be for other purposes. And so this pond study, like I say, the permits, they give out a permit, is $10 annually for a permit for a pond, and that's just to go out and even do any of the inspections of the pond. That's too low. So I think the whole review of the whole process is basically what this bill is about. And it would be a study done by EQC, which I think they're the ones that deal in the right spot for these kind of studies. So that's basically what the bill does, and that's what the money is about, is for the study.
Okay. Are there proponents?
Good afternoon, or good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Clayton Elliott, ELLIOTT, representing Montana Trout Unlimited. Wanted to stand up in support of House Bill 520, thank the sponsor for bringing this, thank the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks for the work in putting this study together. I will reserve comments on the value of the study and the need from a policy standpoint. I think that was thoroughly vetted. But the reason why we chose to go the study route, and you see the fiscal note in front of you, there are a variety of issues. Representative Logie talked about the numbers and complexity and breadth of issues associated with private ponds in Montana. And we saw the value, both the department and stakeholders saw the value to really look at this issue over the interim in an interim committee, being a responsible path forward to bring forward legislation. A number of times in my career here, we have seen private pond bills come to the legislature that I don't think were fully vetted by the diverse stakeholders. We think this interim committee process is a valuable place to not only bring diverse perspectives and all the stakeholders together. You'll see the fiscal note reflects the $100,000, I believe, to complete the study. We think this is time well spent, money well spent, to do this in a thorough, comprehensive way, because if you take any one of these issues, it's hard to extract them from the others. This venue is the right place to do it. So we think that this is a good investment for your time and helps bring better work product to this body next legislative session that is more thoroughly vetted by that diverse stakeholder group. So we urge your support for House Bill 520 and the investment made here in the fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Additional proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Krista Lee Evans, EVANS, and I'm here today on behalf of AGI, the Association of Gallatin Agricultural Irrigators, as well as the Senior Water Rights Coalition. I don't need to repeat what Mr. Elliott said, but we're of that same mind. Ponds in the Gallatin, you can't really throw a rock without hitting a pond, and the impacts on water rights or the lack thereof are something that needs to be analyzed. So we believe that the interim study is an appropriate way to look at how ponds will be managed moving forward, as well as the illegal use of water for ponds. So we stand in support. Thank you.
Okay. Additional proponents?
Good morning again, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Boslow-King, spelled B-O-S-L-O-U-G-H hyphen K-I-N-G, and I represent the Montana Association of Conservation Districts. We also support this going through a study bill and having time to bring in stakeholders, including conservation districts and the communities that are represented by districts, to work through and analyze this in the interim process. With that, I will say that, again, conservation districts support this bill, and I am available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Murphy, representing the Montana Water Resources Association. We also stand in support of House Bill 520. As you've heard, with an increasing population in Montana, the changes are taking place. It's important that we continue to do the best job we can to protect the senior water rights of the state of Montana. And a study such as this will give time for the stakeholders to sit down and evaluate where we're going with the use of ponds, for example, within Montana, and the impacts that those can have on senior water rights. So with that, again, Mr. Chairman, we stand in support of House Bill 520.
Are there additional proponents? Proponents online. Opponents. Opponents online. Informational witnesses.
Good morning, Chair Jones, members of the committee. My name is Lena Havron, H-A-V-R-O-N. I am the Chief Financial Officer for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and I'm here for any questions.
Additional informational. Okay, questions from the committee. Questions, Representative Beattie.
Chairman Jones, question for the sponsor.
For the sponsor.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative.
Chairman Jones, Representative Logie. I'm just curious, having not served on the EQC, do you foresee then the EQC meeting more often in order to take on this project and also do whatever the balance of their workload is?
Mr. Chair and Representative, personally, I do not. I see they can incorporate it into their studies that they're, or all the business they're doing. And you're looking at the fiscal note. I'm sure you're thinking they're going to have some meetings anyway. And I think there possibly could be some trimming off of that cost. But I think for them to deal with this, they deal with a lot of the same ideas. And I think to do the study, you need to bring in some outside information. I'm not sure that you need to go on field trips, but I think bringing in some experts and doing some studies, maybe even hiring some drones to fly some areas to look at some situations might be part of those expenditures.
Follow up.
Chairman Jones, Representative Logie, this is a fiscal note review, so I'm trying to think of my way through this. So this worthy project then may well displace some other business that the EQC might be involved in?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that is a possibility because I'm not aware of their full agenda, what's coming in the interim. And so they may have to have additional meeting or two because of not being able to cover all their topics, or maybe their meetings will extend an extra day because of incorporating this into their topics.
Follow up. Just a comment then. I think that this is probably a good approach to take if you want to, certainly if you want to prioritize the work of the EQC. I just hope that they have, not understanding the rest of their workload, we can't understand what other impact that might have on their budget. But for my part, I think this is a great project.
Okay. Additional questions from the committee? Okay. Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and committee, I think if it does require extra time, I think it would be money well spent, and that's to the point of the fiscal note. Not knowing their agenda, and we don't know interim committee agendas, but the cost of these ponds, illegal or legal, on agriculture to Montana needs to be part of this study, because the lost production because of water right misuse or evaporation that comes out of the study, it can have a big negative impact on the farmers and ranchers down below. So the economics dealing with these ponds is so important to study. And then we also have the extra expenses that can be incurred to FWP for the aquatic invasive species that come about because of some of these illegal ponds and some of the legal ponds. And so if we can get to the study of that, we can save money and from some of the other agencies as well. So I think it all flows together as a net gain for all Montanans to spend the money on the study and And part of this, too, can be an education process also. And I think there are probably a lot of legislators that don't understand the added expense of what these ponds and can have on agriculture and, like I say, FWP. And so I just believe the money would be well spent. Thank you. Green light.
5-2. Okay, that closes the hearing on, House Bill 520. Chair Hopkins.
We'll open the hearing on House Bill 8. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 8 is the renewable resource loan portion of the renewable resource grant and loan program, the first part of which you just saw in House Bill 6. When it comes to the renewable resource loan program, what we are talking about is large water infrastructure buildouts. I constantly say, or have said in this committee for now four sessions, that this is the type of infrastructure without which there's not a whole lot of a point to the rest of the kind of infrastructure. This is literally building the future of the state of Montana. As a starting point, these loans are backed by the Coal Severance Tax Trust. Not so important for our work here in appropriations, but just to make sure the folks know, as we take House Bill 8 out to the House floor, we need to hit a very high vote mark in order to get House Bill 8 across. And considering that, in my impression, this is the most important bill that Section F processes, I just want to make sure that everybody has that on the table in front of them. So, Mr. Chairman, we will have folks to come up here and talk about the projects, the authorities, and the rest of the stuff that's here in the bill. So with that, I will sit down for proponents. Opponents, look forward to the conversation and reserve to close.
Thank you. Proponents for House Bill 8.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Anna Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R, and I work at the Department of Natural Resources in the Conservation and Resource Development Division. House Bill 8 comes to you, as Representative Hopkins said, as part of the Renewable Resource Grant and Loan Program. It is a legacy program. It has been around since the 1980s. We've probably done 300 loans over the years since the 80s. We have never had a default. This program comes into play and is important because in many of the large water, wastewater irrigation project, there is a local share that the communities or the facilities or the entities have to come up with. They can come to this program, they can borrow the money from the program, and again, put in their local cost share into this. The natural resource area is, I think, rather small in all the many things you have to do, corrections, education, and anything. It's not real sexy to put pipe in the ground. It's not real sexy to rehabilitate a dam. But they're really important things. If we don't have these things done and provide basic clean water and treat the waste in communities, if we don't have those dams and those irrigation facilities for people to raise crops, you don't have a whole lot else in your communities. So those are very important to us. Again, we've never had a default in the program. We've got 12 projects listed because of some cost increases. We do have a couple amendments where costs have gone up, and then we did have one project drop out. And I'm here for questions if you need anything. Thank you so much for your time. We want to thank the Long Range Building staff, the OBP staff, the LFD staff, who helped us journey through listening to the projects that communities and irrigation facilities have brought to the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rob Cook, and I represent North Central Montana Regional Water and also the Dry Red Regional Water Authority. In House Bill 8, there's bond authority provided for each of Montana's four regional water authorities, and that bonding authority allows the regional water authorities to be more flexible with their construction schedules, or maybe with even the possibility to meet a match on additional federal monies. And so we thank the committee for their work on the bill and the sponsor, and we hope you support it.
Mr. Vice Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Krista Lee Evans, EVANS, and I'm here today on behalf of Dry Prairie Rural Water. And similar to Mr. Cook, Dry Prairie takes advantage of the loan authority in order to create their local match for when they receive federal funds. So we ask a support on this, primarily on that point. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kelly Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H. I'm the executive director of the Montana League of Cities and Towns. We have about 37 municipalities that benefit from or are planned to be serviced by our regional water authorities. They all put in their own work in terms of connecting to that system, and part of their contribution to that system is giving up their water rights to the system. So we stand in support of this bill and ask for your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, Mike Murphy, representing the Montana Water Resources Association. We stand in support of House Bill 8. These are revolving loan dollars that are going out that are providing for infrastructure investments that are important to the those that utilize those infrastructure, but also to the overall economic position and benefit of the communities as well as the state of the whole. And these are extremely important, again, to the irrigators, the family farms and ranches out there that benefit from the use of these dollars. These are, as you've heard, these are dollars that these individual projects, individual family farms and ranches are taking on a responsibility for repayment. So they're dollars that are being used by those that benefit, but also those that provide for the economic benefit to the overall state of the state of Montana. And as you've heard, for example, Senator Lang and Ms. Patrick indicated, these are dollars that would go, extremely important dollars that would go very a long ways in regards to the overall issue associated with the St. Mary project, for example, but also for our rural water systems and other irrigation projects throughout Montana. So again, Mr. Vice Chair, we stand in support of House Bill 8.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Clayton Elliott, ELL-IOTT, again representing Montana Trout Unlimited, and we just wanted to offer our support for House Bill 8 as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Good morning, Vice Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Boslow-King, spelled B-O-S-L-U-G-H hyphen K-I-N-G, and I represent the Montana Association of Conservation Districts. We also stand in support of House Bill 8 and the important loan authority it provides to regional water authorities that conservation districts are very involved in and often sit on the boards of, as well as irrigation projects and St. Mary. So with that, we stand in support, and I am available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other proponents? Seeing none, do I have any opponents? Seeing none, nothing online. Questions from the committee? House Bill 8. Representative Beattie.
Thank you, Chairman Keenan. Question for the sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beattie.
Chairman Keenan, good sponsor. Where is the Greenfields Irrigation District?
Mr. Chairman, did we have any maps to pass out for them?
I don't, but I can get some tea time.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative, as we get close to executive action, I would like to provide folks with a map. It actually makes it a lot clearer. But you're looking at Teton, Mr. County, or Mr. Wow, that sentence didn't work out. Mr. Chairman.
So what was the sentence?
I'm not sure I heard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beattie, Teton County. Teton County, Mr. Chairman.
McCone. Teton.
I tried pronouncing you literally that for every me, single way.
Okay, T-E-T. And where is the East Fork Dam Rehabilitation Project?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure if I should have somebody else pronouncing these things. Simply
perhaps I should put my hearing aid in and it would work better.
Mr. Chairman, Representative BDM, I apologize. Which one were you just asking about?
East Fork Dam Rehabilitation.
That would be, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that would be in Granite.
Granite. Any one of those would work.
Thank you. I understand whose house district that is. And and back to Greenfields Irrigation District, this is a hydro development project. Could you explain, is this a hydroelectric generation project?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, given my percentage of bats so far, I'm going to go ahead and just turn that over here for the rest of them and try to save myself a little bit, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Miller.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, that is a very small hydro project to pay for the pumping and items that come along with an irrigation facility. But yes, they are looking to put a small hydro facility on that dam or on that irrigation facility.
Thank you.
Follow up.
I know where Painted Rocks is, so I won't ask that question. Can you explain why the Painted Rocks Dam Rehabilitation Project was dropped from the bill in the amendment?
Representative Beattie, the Water Resources Division has only so much staff and so much money, so they have deferred to put more money into the East Fork project and then come back to the Painted Rocks project. So their number one priority is the East Fork Dam at this time. So they will come back to that. It's just that they only have so much staff and so much money.
Follow up. So just so that I'm clear, the priority that was placed on the Painted Rocks Dam rehabilitation was based upon whose prioritization?
The work at, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the work at the Water Resources Division. But I can get you more information on that if you need it.
Follow up. Just so that I'm clear, this was a decision made by DNRC.
That is correct.
And what is the threshold, follow-up, this is for the sponsor of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative.
What is the threshold for passage of this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this is a 3/4 vote of the floor. I believe that only counts on third reading, and I believe I make that mistake and try to talk to people about second reading every session, so let's go ahead and try to get it right at least once here from the beginning. It will require a very significant 3/4 vote on third reading in both the House and the Senate, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Noted.
Further questions? Any questions? House Bill 8. Yep. Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is maybe for the sponsor, but I think if anyone else wants to take a stab at it, they can go for it. I'm looking on page 3, the St. Mary's Diversion Project local share amount. That's $48 million, but the thing that caught my eye is that this has some caveats to it, some contingencies, and I'm just curious about where those contingencies came from and what the likelihood are of those contingencies coming into play.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, so every time that you will see House Bill 8, you will see House Bill 8 with this reauthorization included in it. As far as the likelihood of those things coming to be, I'll go ahead and turn it over, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you'll notice that there's an item in line 9, I believe it is, that the federal government entering into the agreement with the state of Montana, designated state and total project costs. Previous to this, we had not had a commitment from the federal government. We now have that $100 million commitment and some other commitments from the federal government. This being owned by the federal government, the state didn't necessarily want to fix an asset and have these communities and these folks in debt themselves and then not get any reciprocity, if you will, from the federal government also contributing money to the project.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So this is just for the sponsor. I'm just trying to understand the logistics. So every time we have House Bill 8, we put up this $40 million, and it just sits until these qualifications are come into play.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, I tend to think about it as it is there until the federal government decides to do its job in any reasonable or competent way, Mr. Chairman.
And follow up, Mr. Chair, Mr. Sponsor, and has this $40 million changed over time, or have we just had a flat amount?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I can only speak for the time that I've been here, but in the time that I've been here, it has not changed, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Representative Hildegard.
This is probably a question for the sponsor, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Representative.
So we heard Senator say that the St. Mary's needed $53 million. They've got 40 here. So is that a combination through all these bills that we've heard this morning, or is this going to be amended?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is a great question. So we are talking about different things here. Just like when we were talking about the $100 million coming from the federal government, we were talking about that $100 million going specifically for the diversion dam to deal with the issues of bull trout. When we're talking about the $53 million that you currently see within House Bill 6, we are talking about those funds going towards the repair and replacement of the several siphon, there you go. And we were just talking about it 5 minutes ago. That $53 million is to go towards those siphon build-outs. And so when you're looking at the $40 million local share reauthorization here in House Bill 8, you are not looking at the siphons, if that made sense, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
It is early, but so are we talking about between these bills that we'll be dedicating $93 million to St. Mary's then?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I guess it depends on how you think about it. I mean, in a technical sense, yes. The question with the $40 million is, does it end up actually getting used? The question with the $53 million is not, does it end up getting used? It ends up getting used is the actual cost to do that project. With the $40 million, we are, of course, dealing with the federal government, which makes things slightly more complicated, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you. Question from Ms. Miller, I think, but feel free to refer wherever. Last night we had a discussion where a great deal of angst seemed to be put forward about issuing some loans for less than less than the rate that we might earn on the general fund or in the coal tax trust, and that would be harmful for the general fund. And so that's where my question comes from. And on line 19 here on page 1, it says interest rate for these projects is 3% or the rate at which state bonds are sold, whichever is lower. So if we were in a situation where the state bonds were issued at 3.5%, we're offering this money to 3%. What happens with that other 0.5%? Where does that come from?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. If the interest rate on the bonds were 3.5%, we would, according to this legislation, offer the loan at 3%.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair and Ms. Miller. I got that part, but the question was, what happens to the gap?
The gap comes from the income from the coal severance tax that comes in.
And follow up. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is, Mr. Chair and Ms. Miller, is that doesn't show up on the fiscal note as a cost to the general fund. Obviously, we don't know what you're going to issue the bonds would be issued at yet. But is that a potential cost to the general fund if the bonds have to be issued at a higher rate than 3%?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the coal tax revenue comes in as a state special revenue fund. So there isn't a direct impact to the general fund. There would be a direct impact into the flow of revenue coming into the coal trust. That's where the impact would be. Now, the general fund does get interest income from the coal tax trust, but it's an indirect. But yes, there would be an impact.
There would be an impact. Thank you.
Any other questions, House Bill 8? Seeing none, Mr. Chairman, would you like to close?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. Just to reiterate once again, these projects are incredibly important to the state of Montana, obviously incredibly important to the folks who are involved with them. These dollars allow us to leverage a significant amount of federal dollars for these projects, and these projects themselves, the build-outs, are really quite expensive, and as such, we need to maximize as much of those federal dollars as we possibly can. And then one more pitch as we get to the floor, Mr. Chairman, that we need to have everybody on this bill. For the last few sessions, we have worked pretty hard to take infrastructure as close to a nonpartisan, take a look at the actual finances that we have as a state to put towards these kind of projects, take a look at the projects for what they are, combine those two together, and have an actual infrastructure plan that works for the state of Montana. This is a heavy part of it, and without this, there is not much of a rest of the infrastructure plan. So I would urge due consideration. I would ask for a due pass, thank the committee for its time, and close on House Bill 8, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Hopkins. That concludes the hearing on House Bill 8, and we'll move right into House Bill 11. Chairman Hopkins.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Fitzpatrick, House District 77, Granite and Durlage Counties. I am here today to bring to you House Bill 11. This particular bill in the old days was known as the Treasure State Endowment Program. Its name has been changed. It's now called the Montana Coal Endowment Program. This particular bill provides grants for water and wastewater treatment and for bridges throughout the state of Montana. There are three components of the bill. The first section contains a list of 40 entities which are proposed to receive grant money for the repair of wastewater and water systems. There are 40 entities in total. The total appropriation is $23.8 million. The second part of that section deals with bridges. It starts down on page 3 on about line 18, and there are 12 projects listed in that. Again, these are all given to county governments except for the city of Drummond, which gets a smaller project. There are 12 projects here totaling $6.4 million. The final component of the bill is found back in Section 7, and this is an appropriation of $10 million to the regional water system projects. These projects are located in north central Montana, one up around the Havre area next to the border, and two up in northeastern Montana, and then one down in the kind of generally speaking in the Roundup area. These projects provide basically potable water, stock water, that kind of stuff. It's not irrigation water per se to houses and communities in those areas. The appropriation was amended in the bill from $7 to $10 million because DNRC said that the revenue estimate was coming in much higher than they originally expected. This money is also matched with federal money. The match rates vary from project to project. The lowest match rate is a kind of a 60-40 split, so you get $6 for every one that we put in, and the highest match rate is 80-20 with an 8-to-1 match. So I'll sit down at that point and allow the proponents to discuss the bill further with you.
Proponents for House Bill 11, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Renee Lemon, L-E-M-O-N. I'm the Community MT Division Administrator with Department of Commerce. We administer the Montana Coal Endowment Program. With me today is Becky Anseth. She's the program manager. I want to thank Representative Fitzpatrick for sponsoring the bill and the work of the Section F committee to bring forth this proposal. We have the governor's budget volume, which is pretty handy because it provides one-pagers on each of the proposed projects. So we're going to hand those out, and we're available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other proponents while we're doing our Passing out? Hopefully not passing out.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, are you going to come back to them?
I guess not.
Okay.
This is
all right.
Some reading material.
I'm Rob Cook, and I represent North Central Montana Regional Water, which is loosely based on Haver, and then also Dry Red Water, which is, I guess, not really based on Circle. It has two hubs, right? Circle and just west of Sydney. And so this bill, House Bill 11, contains $10 million of project money. This project money is what maintains the construction schedules for each of Montana's water authorities. I thank the committee for providing the increase from 7 to 10 million, and I hope that you all can support it.
Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Krista Lee Evans, EVANS, and I'm here today on behalf of Dry Prairie Rural Water Authority, and the sponsor and Mr. Cook addressed the importance of these construction costs for us. Again, thank you for going from the $7 to $10 million. Dry Prairie's in northeastern Montana, and we're getting really close to full build out, but we need additional funds to continue on our construction schedule and keep bringing safe, healthy water to communities in northeastern Montana. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kelly Lynch, LYNCH. I'm the executive director of Montana League of Cities and Towns. We have about 34. Oh my gosh, why do I keep saying that? 34. There are actually 34 municipalities that stand to improve projects with a grant through the MSEP program. It's hard for me to remember. It's MSEP now and not TSEP. So we stand in strong support of HB 11 and ask for a yes vote. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karen Alley, A-L-L-E-Y. I'm Associate General Counsel for the Montana Association of Counties. Montana Association of Counties supports House Bill 11, specifically as it relates to the funding for bridges. This funding supports counties and their ability to build critical infrastructure and improve critical infrastructure. These funds are some of the very few that are available for bridge work specifically, and I believe the sponsor indicated this bill lays out a dozen bridge projects, 11 that affect counties, one that affects the cities. And so we appreciate the extent to which Coal Country has supported infrastructure statewide, and we ask that this bill be supported. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Todd Devlin, D-E-V-L-I-N, Todd with two D's. In the past, Prairie County, on behalf of Prairie County, we've used this program. It's a good program, and we hope you support it and support the nominations from the Department of Commerce for the 11 projects. Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chairman, again, Mike Murphy, representing Montana Water Resources Association. We stand in support of House Bill 11 for the reasons you've heard. Certainly, these are very important to our rural water authorities and other uses throughout Montana and the infrastructure that are provided for those residents of our rural Montana. So again, with that, Mr. Vice Chair, we stand in support of House Bill 11.
Thank you. Ms. Miller.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, we want to thank the work of the Section F committee. Regional water is very important. House Bill 11, Section 7, supports the state cost share that goes into these communities. We're lucky because we have communities like the Dry Prairie Regional Water System, which is almost about, I would say, 90% complete. And having decent water in a community is really important. It makes a difference in people's lives. It does things for their health that cannot be measured. It takes care of household items like your washing machine and your water heater do not fall apart as fast. And you just don't have to deal with the aggravation of a smell to water that is not desirable. These systems are very important. They will not only help these communities, they will help the businesses, they will help the schools, they will help the hospitals by providing clean water, and we're very lucky to have them. So thank you for your support of this.
Morning again, Clayton Elliott, ELLIOTT, representing Montana Trout Unlimited. Wanted to stand in support and offer our support for House Bill 11. You will hear both in House Bill 8 and 11 the multifaceted benefits of clean, safe drinking water and those infrastructure investments that are necessary to provide it, that those benefits trickle across the landscape. So we stand in full support of House Bill 11 and thank the sponsor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is George Harris, H-A-R-R-I-S. I'm the executive director of the Montana Coal Council, and I'm here representing the entire coal industry of Montana and the suppliers of the coal industry. We're just general comments is that we support the use of these funds. As you know, the importance of the coal industry in Montana, and as their representative, we're pleased to be able to support state government. Since the inception of the coal severance tax, some $2.4 billion has been brought into the coal severance trust fund. Anywhere from $40 to $60 million a year comes into the fund, half to the general fund to support programs, half to support these community types of programs. The coal industry has brought in 28 million tons of coal this year, and we're continuing to produce, and we're going to continue to operate. So we're pleased to be able to support these programs. The coal board and the various programs throughout state government are well managed. The Department of Commerce and Natural Resources have a fine staff. We appreciate Representative Fitzpatrick and the other chair that are overseeing these programs. With that, Mr. Chairman, we're pleased to offer our support and appreciation. And any questions, I'll be glad to try to respond to those. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you. That's a lot of dust. Any other proponents? Seeing any opponents? Nothing online? No opponent information? We just had a... Mr. Shaw, opponent, proponent, either way.
I'm a proponent, sir, and I want to thank the chairman and the committee members for allowing me to speak. I commented on House Bill 6 earlier. And I am extraordinarily in support of a bill such as this, to especially Representative Fitzpatrick referring to the 40 entities that are beneficiaries of the bill for wastewater. However, my caveat here is that Fort Smith's program to replace its complete wastewater system is excluded from the bill. And I'm imploring the committee to consider including us. My name is Alan Shaw, A-L-A-N-S-H-A-W, and I represent the Fort Smith Water and Sewer District. As you know, we are in the process of replacing the wastewater system that has badly failed and is leaking into the groundwater and the Bighorn River, causing significant health and safety issues for the community. I'm here to ask the committee to consider awarding funds to reduce our funding shortfall, which we are facing presently. This shortfall is a result of multiple issues: inflationary factors, increased expensive additional DEQ and EPA requirements such as aeration of the lagoon, sludge removal, rerouting of electrical power, etc. The original budget for our project was approximately $5.9 million and now has been revised to $9.1 million. On our own, and as a result of hard, diligent efforts by the board, the district has raised $6.5 million. We would consider that we do have what has been referred to earlier as quote unquote skin in the game. We have a commitment from the state revolving fund, SRF, to cover this shortfall. However, if we take a loan from them for approximately $2.6 million, the residents of Fort Smith will be severely burdened by having to pay back this debt. The district is currently repaying a $2.5 million loan for replacing our antiquated water system a few years ago, and an additional $2.6 million loan will be extraordinarily burdensome. It has been asserted that the Fort Smith project is unworthy for additional funding because we have, and I quote, done nothing so far to warrant this consideration, unquote. I respectfully submit that this is completely inaccurate. We have worked tirelessly for 2 years to get to this point. We are on the verge of putting the project out for bids in the next week or so and expect to begin putting pipe in the ground this summer. We meet every month or so with the regulatory agencies, namely Montana DEQ, Montana DNRC, the EPA, MSEP, RRGL, the Economic Development Agency, ARPA, and our bond council. Yesterday, I spoke to Ms. Anna Miller from DNRC, who oversees much of these programs, and asked her to comment on the progress of Fort Smith when compared to other ARPA-approved programs. She stated to me that we are completely on track and potentially well ahead of other ARPA-funded programs. I appreciate your consideration and assistance and implore you to consider adding the Fort Smith Wastewater Replacement Project to House Bill 11. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your time, and I will be available for questions. And our engineering firm is also signed in as a participant of this meeting in case there are questions that I am unable to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Do we have any other proponents? Seeing none. Opponents? Are there any opponents? Informational witnesses? Seeing none. Questions from the committee? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you. My question was for Ms. Miller, but I'll ask the sponsor instead, since she stepped out. So, Mr. Chair and Representative, Section 7 in the bill on the appropriation for the Montana Coal Endowment Regional Water System. So this is $10 million, which I guess would go for each system would get $2.5 million. Is that fair to say?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, I'm not sure that it's equally divided. I think that what they do is assess what kind of projects are going to be taken on and what those individual costs are, and they allocate the money that way. But, I mean, everybody gets a share, but it may not be exactly equal.
Okay, thanks for that. Follow-up. Mr. Chair and Representative Fitzpatrick, the in line 6, it says it's to finance the state share of regional water system projects. So what is the state's share?
Well, the
First
of all, through the chair, Chairman Keenan and Representative Hamilton, the state share will be its proportion of the cost of the project that's being undertaken in this biennium. Just to try to break it up as an example, let's say a project is designated as with a cost of say $8 million. Some of these projects have a lower federal match rate than others, and so there's generally at least a 6-to-1 match for federal to state. And one of the systems, I believe, has an 8-to-1 match. So to use that example, if you had an $8 million project, you'd be looking at the state contributing roughly $1 million and the feds contributing, say, $7 million in that case.
Great. That helps. Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair and Representative, so we see the regional water projects here in 11. I think we see them in 6 as well. And I guess I'm wondering, Eight. Thank you. That was my question, is can you tell me where they are in totality?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, each of the regional water projects has a little bit different cost share. For instance, the Dry Prairie cost share was 75 federal, 25 non-federal. Of that 25 non-federal, the state and the Dry Prairie Regional Water System agreed to split that in half. In the Central Montana Regional Water System, it's more 65-35 split. So 65 federal and then 35 split between the state and the locals. So we can get you that information on all four systems. Also, there is the loans in House Bill 8, which are will provide loans to those local communities so they can put in their share on the regional water systems. And then is the, there is a state share in Section 7 of House Bill 11, where the state puts in its cost share.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Miller, then, so the split between, say, in Dry Prairie at 75-25 and the other, the one you mentioned at 65-35, how were those determined, and are they different for every one of the four?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they are different for each one because each one has happened at a different period of time. So those reflections are the federal appropriators that authorize those.
Okay. And then you would get me that list of
Absolutely.
Breakdown. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Stuart Paragoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for the sponsor, but he can re-refer it if he wants. Just before the question, I do know that with the Fort Smith issue that we did give them a combination package last biennium. And so, which the proponent had alluded to. And so I just wanted, the question is, and he mentioned that there was a SRF loan that they had refused or did not want to take. Is that, am I correct in that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stuart Paragoy, I believe that's what he said, that they were offered a loan, but they thought that the terms were such that it would be, create a tremendous burden on the users, and they were reluctant to take it. I don't know that he actually refused it.
Okay, follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
So I guess, and you can refer this, this is for the sponsor. Yeah, he can refer this as well. So in his comments then, he talked about that, that they were ready to move forward, and so and also mention ARPA funds. So I do know that there's this is a package that that was brought forward. So what is the hitch then?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stuart Paragoy, I don't have my file with me exactly, so I'm trying to do this from memory, but I recall that when he testified before Section F, he basically went through the history of this project and had shown that they had, over several years, accumulated money for this project, but had not actually spent anything and gotten anything done. And he was then coming before the committee to ask for additional money for this program, but the Department of Commerce has essentially a requirement that before they will give you a second grant, you have to complete the first one for which you were allocated money. And they were allocated money in the last, in the 21 session, and they haven't completed that work. So they're not eligible for an additional grant this season.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's what I wanted to have for the record. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is for the sponsor. Mr. Chairman, Representative Fitzpatrick, I'm not too wise in the ways of Section F, and so I need to ask you a question about whether you consider conditioning any of these dollars based upon representations by the applicant. So specifically, we're talking about using coal dollars, and as Mr. Harris said, these dollars are going to communities that may or may not be supportive of the mining of coal. Have you considered getting some sort of a vote of the governing body of the county, or I guess in this case the city, indicating that it is fully supporting the mining of coal, not only presently, but in the future in the state of Montana, in order to be eligible for receipt of these funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mercer, excellent question, and the answer is no. We have evaluated all of these projects simply based upon their technical merit and the funds that they requested, and whether or not it looks as if it's an economically viable project. But if you want to consider drafting an amendment for House Bill 11 to do that, I'd be certainly willing to entertain it.
Thank you very much, Representative Fitzpatrick. And I will be working on that with you. Thank you.
We have had that discussion over the years. Any other questions on House Bill 11? No other questions. Senator would like to close.
Oh, Chairman Keenan, thanks for the promotion. Members of the committee,
that's true.
A few comments here. First of all, I really want to commend Ms. Lemon and Ms. Anseth from the Department of Commerce for the actually superb job that they did with this particular grant program. These actual applications that they receive are actually very voluminous. There's a great deal of information that need to be provided by the applicants, and they did an absolutely amazing job of boiling that stuff down into a digestible description that they could bring to the committee. It was frankly just the opposite of what we saw in particularly in the House Bill 10, where we were asked to consider the IT projects, which frankly were unintelligible before the committee. But I have to commend the group that brought those. They came in yesterday with a very good description. They did an outstanding job. And as I mentioned to Representative Mercer alone, we simply looked at the technical merit of these projects and whether the economics worked. And because of the amount of money available this particular year, all of the projects that were applicants or successful applicants have been granted funds. It's not been a situation that they've had in past years where some people made it because they were above the line and others were not. Everybody got funded this time. Thank you.
That concludes the hearing on House Bill 11. That concludes our slate of bills for this morning. Representative Chairman Jones.
And as I'm sure you're not surprised, we're going to try to do some executive action. So our two bills this morning were 100-0 off the floor. And so we'll take a look at 743, 740. Because it's a smaller number, 520, it's not an 80-20 or above bill, but I guess I would propose that we consider House Bill 520, the pawn bill of Logie's, and then the budget amendment bill, House Bill 4. It's time I'd ask Ms. Sasano to come down and bring us up to date what's in House Bill 4, the budget amendment bill, which is just a... and I think folks in this committee, well, I'll explain it at the time, but folks on this committee, I believe, understand what the budget amendment bill does. And I think those are the four bills that we could possibly take care of this morning. So 743, 744, and 520. And Representative Mercer, have you received your information on 629 yet, or do you want to delay a little bit longer on that's the Brandon Lair, Representative Lair's bill?
Chairman, I see that I have an email here. I really haven't had a chance to look at it, though, so if we can defer for either this afternoon or tomorrow, that would be my preference.
We'll do so. Yep, let's just... Oh, okay, just a second. Some amendments to hand out.
Mr. Chairman, I would move due pass on House Bill 4.
Okay, it's moved on due pass on House Bill 4. and I know there's an amendment. We might as well put the amendment on and we talk about the amended bill. So this is the amendment, I believe.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would move to amend House Bill 4 with amendment HB 0004.001.001.
Okay. So at this point, we could discuss the amended bill. So a little bit of recall here. House Bill 4 is the budget amendment bill. I'm going to have Ms. Sasano bring us up to date on exactly what has changed in here. But effectively, when we are out of town, federal dollars, when they come in, are added by budget amendments and they're brought before the Legislative Fiscal Committee. When we are in town, we have to appropriate the dollars. These are monies that are coming in with us in town. This we'll probably likely see this bill again. We're just crossing the floor with it. The Senate's likely to sit upon it, and if any additional stuff comes back, it'll come the other way with the additions added. With that, Ms. Sasano, would you mind taking us through the bill so that I, too, for the floor, can learn what's in it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Amy Sasano, S-A-S-S-A-N-O, from the Budget Office. So there's about five moving pieces here, and I'll try and walk you through them. So the bill is introduced, had to be captured at a point in time, and so that was roughly mid-November. So the statute says that, as you stated, Mr. Chairman, the Budget Office has the authority in 17.7 Part 4.5 to authorize budget amendments for funds that were received in the interim when you're not in session, assuming that we didn't know about them at the time that you were in session. So the introduced bill you don't see any numbers because those were appropriations that agencies received and were spending, and we just need the authority to continue to spend those funds to the expiration date of the grant documents. So the first moving piece, I was notified by someone on my staff yesterday that there was an error in the spreadsheet that calculated the numbers that were put on the fiscal note. So the original fiscal note showed a total of $592 million. There was about $5 million in the bill that was missed in the calculation in the Department of Transportation, and about $214 million missed in the Department of Commerce. So the true total that should have been on the original fiscal note for the bill was about $814 million. Again, that was captured at a point in time, the balance remaining in those appropriations at the date that that fiscal note was prepared. The next moving piece is that time has passed since that fiscal note was prepared and agencies continue to spend money from those appropriations. So the balance of all the appropriations that are in the bill as introduced is about $770 million. The next moving piece is that between the time that we took the snapshot to put the introduced bill into place and the first day of session, there were additional budget amendments that were received and legally authorized by our office that agencies are allowed to spend those dollars today. So in the amended bill, you will see a combination of two types of amendments. An example is on the first page at the bottom of the page of the amended bill where it doesn't show a dollar amount. So that grant was received by the judicial branch between the snapshot of the introduced bill and the first day of session. Then when you come into session, a switch gets changed and we're not allowed to process fiscal or budget amendments anymore because you're here and you are the appropriators. So if you look at, for example, page 3 of the bill, you'll see budget amendments that have dollar amounts associated with them. So those are awards or budget amendments that we've received since the first day of session and are all on hold pending the passage and approval of this bill. So the total at a snapshot in time as of yesterday of those amendments that are all in red is $87.6 million. So if you add together the balance of appropriations that were in the original bill as of yesterday at the $770 million, you add the total that's in the amendments of $87.6 million. If we were to do a revised fiscal note on this amended bill, the total would show $858 million. And the primary reason that that is so large, as I explained in the hearing on the bill, is related to ARPA, IDJA, CRISA, and CARES Act, kind of that big pack of bills that had a lot of money in them that you appropriated last session, and those end dates for those grants extend beyond September 30th of 2023, so we have to ask for permission again to continue to spend those dollars.
Okay, and Ms. Sasano, you said you did have a spreadsheet of some sort at some point. Is it in a format? You may not have it ready yet.
Mr. Chairman, I can give you mine if you don't mind a little of my chicken scratch on there. And then Quinn can probably get you copies.
I'm good with chicken scratch. I think a spreadsheet might make this more sensical, at least for me. And so, and we could run some quick copies. We'll pause briefly so we can let folks see. This is unusually high because of all the federal grants for a budget amendment bill. It's as we're authorizing more emergency or still linked to the emergency dollars than before.
And Mr. Chair, I'll just add that we continue to track the budget amendments that our office receives. The amendment was drafted the end of last week, so anything between the end of last week and the Senate Finance and Claims hearing, we'll have another amendment for the Senate Finance Committee.
And historically, that's the pathway of the bill. It just keeps amending to add to federal authority at each point until we go home. I just figured it might as well cross the floor and we can go to the Senate side to wait, as we have a much bigger pack of bills to work with than they do at the moment. While we're waiting for our spreadsheet, if there are questions on the budget amendment bill for Ms. Sasano, please feel free. Representative Nave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sasano, on page 4, at the very top, it says Motor Vehicle Division. There is one item in here that doesn't appear to be federal. It's a state special for roughly $1.5 million for the CARS system. I expected this bill to be all federal funding. So how is it that this appropriation got in this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nave, 177402, if I'm remembering my statutes correctly, specifically or allows for very specific exceptions for the authorization of budget amendments. In House Bill 2, coordinated with Senate Bill 191 last session, there was specific language that allowed budget amendments for certain funds that were cut out of House Bill 2 in order to keep the total appropriations down in House Bill 2 related to the maintenance of effort calculation that was in House Bill 632. And so this is some appropriation for the CARS system that the Department of Justice, thank you, is implementing, and they did have a specific allowance for this included in Senate Bill 191 last session that made these appropriations legal. In the original fiscal note for the bill, I believe I broke out, there is a very small portion, probably less than 1 or 2% of the budget amendments that are state special, and they're all specifically authorized in 177402.
Thank you, Ms. Sassano. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So, Ms. Sassano, if I understand this correctly, they were appropriated this money last session, but haven't spent it, and so it is, but it's money that was already appropriated to them.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nave, no, this money was not appropriated to them last session, but there was language in Senate Bill 191 that specifically allowed them to request budget amendment authority for this state special revenue funds for this biennium only. So this is an additional appropriation.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
If I understand the purpose of the bill, these are funds that, you know, we may or may not have been expecting primarily from the feds, but we didn't know what they were going to be, and so we needed to wait a while until we had some idea of what those were going to be. The CAR system's been going on a while. I mean, I think there's been requests for appropriations for CARs in every budget that's come before this committee. And so this doesn't appear to me to be an all of a sudden, oh my gosh, we need to stick it in this additional appropriations bill. I wish there was somebody from Justice here who could answer these questions, because I kind of want to know why the heck do they need another? Why are they asking for more money in this bill? I understand that, because it's not a surprise expense.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Nave, there's two parts to your question. And in any other session but this one, the description of the purpose of this bill is exactly as you stated.
Okay.
However, the specific language that was included in Senate Bill 191 last session excluded the other requirements of 177402 that requires that we didn't know about it during the session. It excluded those requirements from the Department of Justice. And so this is just additional authority for them to implement the parts of CARs that they're implementing today, awaiting their appropriation that's in House Bill 10 to do the rest of the modules.
Okay.
So what is the state special that they are pulling from?
Mr. Chairman, it's... you got me on the spot a little bit on this one. I believe, which I'm never supposed to guess at the podium, but it's one of the ones that assesses a fee on license plates or driver's licenses or something like that.
Okay, so we, because I know this will become a question on the floor that I won't have someone to turn to answer. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to get you additional information.
Representative Beatty.
Chairman Jones, on my small screen here, I'm following through and looking at some of the actions that were taken last session, including SB 191. Probably the best thing for us to do before this is on the floor is to have a flow chart that shows how the exceptions to how we normally handle House Bill 4 were specifically authorized for this particular biennium.
Well,
they're patched into statute, but they're limited to the current FY and the FY before this. So I suspect that there is a trail that I think Ms. Sassano did about as well as you can do explaining it in words, but I think that there's a graphic display of this will make it easy to understand.
So maybe my thought process is, let's see if there's a few more questions. We don't have to do House Bill 4 immediately. What we could do is move the do not pass back. Well, maybe withdraw the motion and make sure everyone's satisfied, because I don't want to risk it on the floor. So since the amendment, let's see, the amendment's on the bill. So let's get done, and then maybe we'll just back our way out and then try this again in about 2 days when we have all the information. So Representative Mercer.
This is just a point of information, Mr. Chairman. In the course of the work of the Section D subcommittee, both Mr. Doig from Mrs. Sano's staff and Ms. Duncan from the LFD spent a lot of time taking a deep dive into everything we did in the 2021 session with respect to CARS and the flow of the money. And I think that if we sort of teed Representative Knave's question up for Mr. Doig and for Ms. Duncan, I bet we can get a chart or get more some breadcrumbs to help you or someone else address this on the floor if it comes up.
So, I mean, I'm comfortable either way. I don't want to go to the floor. The budget amendment's a pretty simple bill on the floor. Normally, it just flows through time. I don't want to run into unusual headwinds. I mean, if you feel we can be comfortable at this point on the floor, I'm kind of a detail freak to be able to answer every question.
Yeah, no, and I agree with the idea of not doing EA and getting it sort of picking up with what Representative Beattie was saying. I think we can get definitive answers to these questions, but it may take a little bit of time with Mr. Doig and Ms. Duncan to do that.
Okay, are there other areas, Vice Chair Cafaro, that you want to make sure we get addressed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the graph. Mr. Chairman, so I don't have this bill in front of my committee ever, and the graph shows a bunch of numbers, but how do I match those up with what's in the bill? And I looked at the fiscal note and didn't quite see. So is there a way to do that, or? So,
Vice Chair Cafaro, we may want to label the accounts. I believe Ms. Sasano speaks numbers on the edge, so this spreadsheet was comfortable for her. We may in time actually want to put names on the numbers. This was the sheet that I believe you brought down just to speak to the numbers, correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, and during the hearing I did have a document if there were questions that went through. I assume that Representative Cafaro was looking especially at DPHHS, and so we do have line-by-line information available for each of the items that's in this sheet, and I'm happy to provide that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then I have another question, which is, Mr. Chairman, Director, on your graph it says original fiscal note incorrect, original fiscal note should have been. I think you said this already, but could you please remind me what happened between the incorrect and the should have been?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cafaro, yesterday, the staff person that works on this, I identified a formula error in the spreadsheet, and it on my eyeballs look, it's limited to the Department of Transportation and substantially in the Department of Commerce, which are 5401 and 6501.
Okay, thank you. One more, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Mr. Chairman, Director, in the amendments, are there any expenditures that we have not yet seen? For example, on page 6, line 5, the Montana Great Outdoors Conservation Legacy Project, or line 23, Central Management Program. So is there new programs in the amendments from last time that are not in the original bill?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Cafaro, your example of the central management program, so because that one does not show a dollar amount specifically associated with that, that is a budget amendment that we received between the snapshot we took to be able to create the introduced bill and the first day of session, where we are still authorized to create those appropriations for agencies. And then your other example, up in Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is a grant award that came in after the first day of session.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, Director, so there are projects or programs in this bill, I mean in the amendment, that weren't in the original bill because of that gap and federal money coming in. Are there any other reasons that we would see something new in here? Just a general question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cafaro, unless we had a mistake or something, no.
Okay, thank you.
Wendy Biden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Ms. Asano. Mr. Chairman, Director, looking at your sheet here and seeing that there's a whole bunch of monies that was brought down at a federal level, whether it be ARPA, CRISA, CARES, all others and whatnot, and then seeing those line items that you have underlined on 54010 and 65010, and I assume these these numbers represent program line items and whatnot. So looking at that one on 65010, the difference between the original fiscal note, which says incorrect on top at $12,713,166.14, and then the next one is saying original fiscal note should have been, and that's at 226. What happened with the math? Is kind of or something or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wendy Boy, without trying to go too far in the weeds for you, we account for appropriations in the SABR system with what's called a subclass, and those are smart-coded to indicate source of authority. Because we have so many appropriations, we ran out of letters, and so we had to start using numbers in those, and so those caused some issues with the formulas in the spreadsheet. On a rough look, it's what's included in the Department of Commerce. My suspicion is that those are both just based on their dollar amount related to the rental assistance programs that we're in, that are being operated out of the Department of Commerce. And so when our staff looked at this yesterday, she identified the issue, and so that's why you have the should have been column, which is what should have been on the original fiscal note. Knowing that the commission or the committee was going to do executive action today, I was reluctant to do a revised fiscal note to make that correction, because if you adopted the amendment, then the day after that I would do an amended fiscal note, and I didn't want to make things more confusing.
One more question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Woody.
Mr. Chairman, and so looking up there closer to the top where you have all of those lists of IUA, ARPA, CRISA, CARES, all others and all of that, and then going to the right there with all of those fundages, and as I understand, those are all one-time only funds coming down from the feds. What's going to happen after all of that money goes away?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wendy Boy, I guess I have two answers to your question. So at the top, if you look at the all others category, that is what's typically the size of House Bill 4 in that neighborhood, and that's why we broke out those other three categories, because they're an anomaly this time, because there's so much federal funding that has come through those bills. And so typically in the all others category, those grants are very specific. And if you look at like Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks as an example, they get a grant to study some fish in some specific river or something. And so when their study is done, then they have their information, and then they're done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any other, Representative Mercer? And what Representative Jones had to go sign for a bill pickup, so he will be right back. But what we'll eventually do is put this amendment on the bill and then pause, get a new fiscal note, and some clarity. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Asano, I want to go through a couple of things in here that were there before and some of the stuff that's new. Starting on page one, why do we still have $28 dollars from adult drug court implementation that are unused, and why wasn't this in the initial draft? I guess this is the first time I've ever had an awareness that there are still federal adult drug court implementation dollars from 2018 that have not been expended.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mercer, if you remember following the hearing, you had a series of questions similar to this one, and I responded and explained each of those an example of some of those. And so it really has, it relates back to the federal government. Sometimes what starts as a 2018 grant has additions to it over time. And so we're just talking about the incremental additions. Other times, if that grant were, for example, a five-year grant, the agency may seek an extension if they weren't able to complete the work of the purpose of the grant. And so it could be, without looking at the documentation for that one specifically, those are examples of why you would see things like that.
Follow up.
And Mr. Chairman and Ms. Sassano, I was looking at your email response earlier, and it was extremely helpful to me, and I think I may make it available to the committee so they can see the programs that you and I had the back and forth on so they can understand that. And I'm going to ask you a couple of follow-up questions on those in a minute, but I guess the thing that caught my eye here is that this district court language was not in the original bill, so I guess, and I'm not asking you to guess, but I guess I'm thinking that there must have been something that the courts didn't know at the time the bill was drafted about this 2018, whether it was a later extension that they got from DOJ, or there was some trigger event that you didn't know about at the time this bill was drafted that causes you to add this now. Is that fair?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mercer, there's about 6 weeks of budget amendments that were processed between the first day of session and when we had to take a snapshot to get the introduced bill into the process.
Okay. So if I may, Mr. Chairman, I've got a follow-up.
Follow-up.
So, Ms. Sassano, I'd like to go to page 3 of the bill. This is line 7 and line 8. There are two lines there about dollars appropriated to the victim compensation through the victim compensation formula grant program. We've had a little bit of conversation about that. That's the VOCA program. And it looks like we haven't fully utilized dollars appropriated or authorized by the federal government in fiscal year 2021 and fiscal year 2022. Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mercer, I have a vague recollection of processing these BCDs, and if I remember correctly, the fiscal year referred to here is the federal fiscal year, so it didn't start until October, and it, unless I'm getting my years mixed up, and they received an additional allocation above what they otherwise would get. And if I remember correctly, the 184 was a carryover of prior year authority that wasn't used.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So, Ms. Sassano, can you get the Board of Crime Control to tell us why they haven't used roughly $468,000 of victim formula grant dollars that were made available in fiscal years 21 and 22, be it a federal fiscal year or a state fiscal year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, I will get the documentation for these. I will note that these two grants are in the Division of Criminal Investigation, not in the Board of Crime Control.
Oh, okay. So thank you for the clarification. So these I guess I'd still appreciate the information, Mr. Chairman, but I understand what you're saying is this isn't for grantees, this is for direct compensation to victims.
I believe so, sir.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Sassano. Follow-up question, Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up.
So, and as I mentioned earlier, Ms. Sassano, your email was very helpful to help me understand. I'm now on page 6. With the Water Quality Division grants, where we had the back and forth about the 2019 non-point source project grants that remain unexpended as of this date. And according to the calculation in your email then, the amount that wasn't expended is $134,000. And I know from your explanation and the reason why this bill exists is to continue to authorize the state to spend those dollars, and that the federal government gives a longer period of time. They don't have to spend the dollars in the same fiscal year. But I think the thing that, and you may feel like you want to defer this to other agencies, but I guess I'm sort of stuck with what's the plan for these dollars. So these non-point source project grants in 2019 and the one that we see on the top of page 7 in 2020 and 2021, the whole purpose of getting those dollars is to minimize the, well, actually to try to take out non-point source discharges of phosphorus and nitrogen. And I understand that we're trying to extend the authority to use the dollars, but obviously the quicker that we use the dollars, the quicker we reduce the impacts that are created through non-point source discharges. So how can we get more clarity? I'm happy to vote for the bill, but I guess I'm happy to, I'd like to try to figure out why the dollars aren't being used more quickly than they are. And I know you can't answer that question, but that's my beef with this is, it seems like there needs to be more urgency with the distribution of the dollars. So that's, I guess maybe that's not a question, Mr. Chair, but it's...
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, I will respond anyway and point out that my note is what's taking so long on those two items, although my suspicion is that COVID and wintertime probably have some component to that.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may just sort of follow up, and again, I want to make sure to get the email to Mr. Holzer so the committee can see all the clarity that Ms. Asano provided to me on these. I just will say that when people look at that email, the unexpended allocation of the 2019 dollars is $134,000. And it's $139,000, or at least it was back in early January, for the 2020 dollars. So there's a lot that remains to be allocated. Same basic thing on page 9 with the hazardous fuel reduction from 2019. There's still $175,000 that has yet to be expended there. My last question, may I have one last follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up.
So I was... Mr. Chairman, Ms. Asano, page 13 caught my eye. Do you know why we're getting federal authority to extend the use of federal dollars for the Wyoming Challenge Academy funding for DMA?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mercer, I do. Wyoming had to close their challenge program, so Montana accepted some those students or cadets so that they could complete their education and training, and so Wyoming is paying us to train those students.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, committee, here's my thought process. I would like to attach the amendment and then hold this, as we've done in the past, in space so that Ms. Asano can then process a fiscal note for the bill as amended. That way the fiscal note can reflect the changes in the amendment, like as we've done in the past, just add the amendment to the bill, then we'll hold. And then once the new fiscal note arrives, and we just got to make sure we don't mistransmit it, obviously, but as long as we can get the new fiscal note prior to then, that'll give us better insight, plus it'll make the floor a much more... You know, since I think Representative Mercer volunteered to carry it on the floor, it'll make it an easier and much less painful place, at least from my perspective in that case.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll just clarify that the revised fiscal note that I will do will show the $858 million that's in the far right-hand column. I am going to follow up on specifically the Department of Justice and those exceptions with a flowchart of those exceptions for this biennium only. And then I have the victim compensation, which I think we figured out, but I will clarify for DCI.
I withdraw my request for follow-up there.
Thank you, Representative Mercer. And then the question, what's taking so long on the couple examples in DEQ and DNRC? And then the only other clarification of what feedback you would request relative to Representative Cafaro's question is if you want the individual list that lists the hundreds of things that go into this that should total to that $858 million.
And so, Vice Chair Cafaro, what the question was to you, what do you want for a report on the...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I put my sheet away, but the sheet that was given, this sheet, it has numbers on the left-hand column. And do those numbers, I assume that, for example, I don't want hundreds of anything. What I was thinking of was on the left-hand column, it says 21100. What would that be?
Oh, my apologies to the committee. That's the judicial branch. I can certainly put names on this instead of numbers.
Thank you.
For those of you that haven't been doing this for 26 years, that probably is more helpful.
And my one request to be is, because state special's unusual, and I remember parts of the 191 and all that process, but as much clarity there so we don't, I need to understand the state special. I remember the concerns it would be larger from last time. But since it's normally a federal bill, we ought to be able to speak to that. So,
Mr. Chairman, I will break that out and just note that there are, last session aside, there are some very specific examples where we are allowed to process budget amendments for state specials. So there's typically a teeny little bit. But it's definitely more this session because of that exception.
Okay. So with that, my Representative Wendy Button.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Ms. Asano. Getting back to the page one here in the new language on lines 24 through 27 there where it says district court operations, is this have anything to, would this tie anything into a previous bill that we passed out of here as far as micromanaging the courts and their budgets?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Windy Boy, yes and no. If this particular court were to be made permanent in the Missoula District Court, then it would show up in one of the new 24 programs that will be shown in House Bill 2. If it's a one-time only grant that is not expected to be recurring, then no.
Okay, and so with one comment, I believe it was the Senator Osmondson, your current boss, that caused 191 that's causing me this stir last time, just for my entertainment saying that. Anyway,
Mr. Chairman, he's always happy to help.
Yes. Yes, he has over the years. With that in mind, my thought process is I'd appreciate putting this amendment on the bill. Then we will pause executive action. What do we have to do? We had to move forward. We had a motion to delay action to a forward time, right? So
there's a motion to approve the amendment.
So the amendment's on the floor. All those in favor of attaching the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Amendment is on the bill, and then a motion to. We might not survive tabling an $850 million bill. Could we hit the motion? Well, you just delay the executive action to a date certain.
Yeah. I'll withdraw my motion to pass this bill, and we'll delay to date certain.
So the motion is to delay executive action to a future date?
Future date.
And so with that, we're just going to make transmittal. All those in favor of delaying a continued executive action till a future date, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We
Mr.
will.
Mr. Chairman, I don't anticipate a problem getting you that information today.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Ms. Sasano.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 743.
It's been moved due pass on House Bill 743. We've seen 743 today by Representative Smith. Is there discussion? Representative Mercer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to vote in favor of this bill. I am a broken record, but I just don't think this fiscal note is at all accurate in terms of what the costs are going to be. And I think the committee should not kill this legislation for fiscal reasons, in my view. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beatty.
Chairman Jones, question for Representative Mercer. Representative Mercer, do you think that this could be implemented within the appropriations already provided?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beatty, I guess I'm a little reluctant to go that far, but it's tempting because as I was trying to establish with Ms. Smitham, to get to the point where there will be a charge of incest against a aunt or an uncle, there would have needed to be a report to law enforcement or CPS that led to an investigation. And this assumes that there would there'd be a new, whatever has happened historically, that somehow there would be a new class of investigations involving aunts and uncles on incest charges that has not been prosecuted up till now as hands-on sex offenses. And that's where I think there is no delta at all. I don't think there is going to be any change at all. If there's a viable hands-on case, it will have been made historically. Now, in the future, perhaps it will be made under this charge as opposed to a hands-on sex offense case, but I just don't see a change in the caseload. What you heard from the department was that there was also a chance that the sentence length would be longer, and that's where I'm getting a little bit nervous about saying that there won't be any charge at all. But their projection is based upon assumption 4, which I just don't think is right. I don't think the average prison term for incest is 63 years. Now, I didn't bother to go look and see what the statutory maximum is, but we just don't have many we don't have people that are at the men's prison for 63 years for incest. Now, maybe the sentence imposed was 80 years, but by the time there are sentence reductions and parole and what have you, I just don't think this is right. I don't think this is right. So, short answer is I don't know if there's going to be additional cost, but if there is, it is not going to approximate what is set forth in this fiscal note.
The comment I would have is the extension of sentence is beyond the four-year window of the fiscal note. So the only thing this fiscal note could be reflecting is somehow either additional cases charged, which I tend to agree with Representative Mercer, something additional that had to occur in the first 4 years, and it had to be additional cases charged or the prosecution would have had to cost more. Again, I'm not opposed to this bill at all. Representative Beatty.
Chairman Jones, I'm persuaded to say that we should ask or direct that this be done with resources available. This fiscal note isn't realistic at all.
Okay, with the fear of delaying the bill, given we have like armies of bills.
Ms. This is a conceptual amendment.
That's what I was about to ask Ms. Johnson. Ms. Johnson.
Yes, Chairman and members of the committee. Typically, I haven't seen where we're amending a criminal statute and adding a suck-it-up amendment. I mean, it certainly can be drafted. I just don't usually see that associated with amendments to criminal statutes.
Representative Beattie.
Well, in the interest of not being difficult, I unless someone else wishes to join me on this campaign, I'll withdraw this. But, you know, this seems to be a something that is happening over and over again on fiscal notes in this particular realm.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I want to second the observations of Representative Mercer. I think you've got a problem here in this fiscal note, too, because you don't have any understanding what the pool of inmates happens to be. I mean, if we've got two inmates at Montana State Prison who, by a combination of crimes, have been sentenced to 100 years, you get a 63-year average sentence, perhaps. But in the real world, that's not likely to happen very often. I also agree with Representative Mercer that the addition of these named or these particular new relationships is not going to generate new cases. You know, they'll if there's a case to be made, a case will be made under current law. In the future, maybe this will give them an extra tool to deal with it. But frankly, I don't see the need for additional money for this particular change in statute.
Representative Nave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just comment that I'm in agreement with my colleague across the room in that if we did a suck it up amendment, I would support that. Because I wouldn't want to see this bill killed just based on the fiscal note.
Okay. Representative Wendy Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question, if I may, to Representative Mercer.
Representative Mercer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, with your experience with some of the cases like this, and I agree, too, that I think this fiscal note is way off note here, but the question is that there's a bill that's coming before us that's going to repeal the statutes of limitations on crimes against kids, and more than likely that's going to probably have some type of impact on this fiscal note or future fiscal note if that occurs. So if that's the case, then about with your figures and maybe using the chairman's algorithms, how much would you figure that this fiscal might have an impact? What would the impact be with this fiscal note, roughly?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Wendy Boyd. So let me take I'm taking it as a two-part question. That first part about we're going to see a bill on statute of limitations. That bill, I believe, will apply only to civil cases. In other words, yes. it would allow a civil case to be pursued. I haven't read the bill, but my understanding is it will be we're going to re-debate what we did in 2019 about civil cases. So, in other words, a victim of child sexual abuse could bring a civil case against the perpetrator, but it wouldn't. We already have extended the statute of limitations for hands-on sexual offenses. We have no statute of limitations anymore. So something that happened in 1995 could be prosecuted by an attorney today. So I don't think this new bill would not drive a bigger number for DOC because it's civil, not criminal. Here, the only way there would be any fiscal impact, in my view, would be if somebody spent more time in the custody of the Department of Corrections for an aunt and uncle convicted under this new provision. So I think there's an argument that if somehow, and frankly, we'll never know to some extent, right? So hypothetical A is you've got an uncle that has committed incest last year, because that statute didn't cover nieces and nephews, it got prosecuted as a hands-on sex offense. Mm-hmm. And if they're sentenced, they're going to get a sentence of X. And the statutory maximum may not be 100 years, as it is for incest, but it's not a small sentence. So the question will be, if that person gets charged in the future when we pass this, are they going to get an incrementally larger sentence? And my argument is, I really doubt it. When you start thinking about parole and all the different mechanisms where, again, that 63-year number I don't think has any bearing in reality. So the question is there some marginal additional time? If there's going to be, because you can imagine the judge is already going to be influenced by the fact that the offense was committed, that it's an incest offense, they're already going to impose a significant sentence in that context. So the question is there going to be any additional marginal time? I think it's highly questionable, and if it is, it's going to be small. So my answer to your question is, if I were trying to do this fiscal note, I just can't imagine the number would be more than $50,000 as a result. And I think there's a chance it's zero.
Thank you. Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think whenever I look at a fiscal note, I kind of think about it as like this is possibly the worst case scenario of what we're looking at in terms of the cost of things. And I appreciate when agencies give us that. However, I think for this particular criminal act, this is a relatively modest price to pay for something like this. And so I think I fully support this bill, and I fully support moving it to the Senate. I think our friends over in the Senate are just as smart as we are and will understand that this is a fiscal note that is meant to give us the full and most conservative possible impact to our budget. And so for those reasons, I will be voting yes on this, and I hope we can call the question now. Thank you.
Okay, I'll take that as calling the question. I'll make one comment on fiscal notes so we understand how they work. The fiscal note itself influences our balance sheet, right? That's its challenge, both cash flow structural or a remaining of OTO. The reality of the actual spend, you get to the end of this session, and there will be a list of summations of all the fiscal notes, and we have to choose to actually provide money. So where it limits us is on our balance sheet of what's available. We can choose, and rarely do we choose to fund these when we disagree with them. We either have to fund them via a box. In my mind, you say, well, in this box is stuff to deal with all of these fiscal notes. And of course, I'm visual that you're asking $24,000. We choose to put in $20,000, or we have to fund directly in two. So the damage to the fiscal note is one, it makes us all feel it's erroneous, and then it pings away at what's available and pulls people off the vote. The actual funding is always within our control. Am I, Quinn, if I've said that incorrectly, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, mostly, I just want to clarify that when you say these hit our balance sheet, these fiscal note numbers, unless they're appropriated in the bill, the fiscal note numbers like this do not hit the bottom line of the balance sheet. They show up on your back pages in the potential column, so you're aware of the potential impact, but they're not included in the impact yet.
Sorry, I should have said they get listed, so they show up. I stand corrected. So in other words, when we go in, and there have been a number of fiscal notes this time that I believe need to be held to much less than was in the fiscal note. It has been interesting, and certain agencies seem to do this at a far higher level than others. Anyway, with that question has been called. Unless Representative Mercer, I'll grant you the grace if you want to say something. Nope, question has been called. Can we voice vote this bill? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimous by those that are present.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on 740.
It's been moved to pass on 740. Again, a bill we just heard. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion and hearing the whisper of the word question out there, it was quiet, but I heard it. All those in favor, can I voice vote this bill? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed. passes unanimous by those that are present.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 520, Logan.
House Bill 520 was the pond bill. I know that did not come off the floor as hard. However, it's unlikely. It's either going to pass or die on its merit. I would have suggested he did it at $95,000. We'd have had peace. He did not. With that discussion, House Bill 520.
Question.
Is there conversation on 520? I probably need to roll call vote 520. Voice vote on... Okay, roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
No.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Caffaro.
Yes.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Falk.
No.
Representative Fitzpatrick. Yes. Representative Gillette.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hastings.
No.
Representative Hilligard.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
Yes.
Representative Mercer.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Knave.
No.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
Yes.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
No.
Representative Schillinger.
No.
Representative Tuss.
Yes.
Representative Whitney Boy.
Yes.
Chair Jones.
Yes. Bill, do you have 17-6? Bill passes 17-6. Okay, I believe that is our executive action we can do. We will, of course, try to do more again after the evening session. So with that, we are, for us, in recess early. So we'll see you right after the floor.
Can I recess? It's in the same day. Do you want me to?
I think it would be okay.
Whichever you prefer. You want me to adjourn?
Did your system crash?
Yeah. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Why don't you adjourn this?
Okay, I'll adjourn because the clerk is whining at me, and then you have to actually show up so I have a quorum this afternoon before you wander off. With that, we're adjourned.